Thank you for joining me today. I'm going to start in a different way today, before we even get to the intro graphic, because today's Veterans Day. And I have made statements in the past or read things that I've written about this to get across to people, to reach people. And I felt it was important to do today more than ever because of what's going on in the world today, because of the election, because of everything that's happening. So before we even actually start the show, I wanted to do something in a way that caught people's attention so we could read this out. Well, this is something that I've written before, but added some things here and there that I thought were very relevant to where we are in the world today. As you all know, today is Veterans Day, a day to honor veterans and their sacrifice. And there's no better way to honor those veterans than by taking the quintessentially American action of speaking truth to power and exposing the very lies that so many veterans were sold by the state. Today, we should remember those who risked their lives for what they believed to be right, and honor them by bringing to light the many different ways in which we have all been deceived by those who have gambled with the lives of generations of Americans for unjust reasons and immoral ambitions. Far too many have been conditioned from birth to blindly serve and to see anything else as an affront to what this country represents. Yet this nation has not represented what it claims to for a long time now, which is why I do what I do. To awaken those lost in all the lies to the reality that their loyalties have been hijacked by those who care nothing for the love we have of this country's core values. Whether or not they were ever truly practiced by the nation's founders, they've become real for us. Real enough to fight for. Yet, not for those just speaking the oath, only 2 moments later sell out to the highest foreign bidder. And this slowly materializing mountain of government lies is why there is such forceful efforts to make holidays like today about glorifying the state and its war efforts, as opposed to those they tricked into carrying them out, despite that being the claim, and to make those of us saying anything less out to be deceivers and manipulators, truly accusing us of that which they are guilty. This is classic propaganda in the truest sense of the word. The saddest part is that so many have bought into this, and so much so, that they don't even know their own country's history, and then turn around and call those of us still embracing the true values of this country the enemy, treasonous even. President Theodore Roosevelt summed it up best. He said, quote, "To announce that there must be no criticism of the president, or that we must stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but it is morally treasonable to the American people." Yet, that's exactly where we are right now. The same thing I always show you about the two-party illusion, that one person takes power and half of the people can see, or you know, half of the people that are inside that paradigm can see that this guy is the worst guy ever, but the other half supports him wholly without seeing any of his faults. And it flip-flops back and forth. That's exactly where we are now. Complete blind support, which is in fact unpatriotic. And then, of course, we don't see the wars that continue and the chaos that continues because of that blind servile, unpatriotic blind support for whoever they put in power. So today, I ask all of those of you out there currently recoiling in disgust for my willingness to speak ill of this country on such a day. I want you to understand that first, I'm not speaking ill of this country. That's actually the deception. I love this country, the real country, its people, you. I'm speaking ill of those who have deceived the masses and actually use our love of this country, our country, the nation of, by, and for the people, to carry out imperialist wars of aggression in our name. I'm speaking ill of the government. And second, to take a step back and simply look at what such blind subservience to all those in power who arrogantly lie to maintain it has done, both in this country and to those around the world who dared to think for themselves. Now, especially on a day like today, we owe it to ourselves and to those who gave their lives for a cause that they likely realized in the process of pursuing was not what they were told it was. We owe to them to speak truth to power and not blindly acquiesce to the jingoistic pressure of the brainwashed masses. It's not hard to do just a little research and see just how many veterans tell quite a different story about what we should be proud of and what we're actually doing overseas. It's also not difficult to see just how hard the establishment works to keep the message of these veterans suppressed, keeping them drugged up and in the shadows. As James Madison, our fourth president and an author of our Constitution, wrote, quote, "Of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded, because it comprises and develops the germ of every other. War is the parent of armies. From these proceed debts and taxes, and armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few. In war, too, the discretionary power of the executive is extended. Its influence in dealing out offices, honors, and emoluments is multiplied, and all the means of seducing the minds are added to those of subduing the force of the people. No nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare." James Madison. And of course, that includes continual warfare against itself.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Wednesday, November 11th, 2020. Thank you for joining me today. I wanted to start a little bit differently just because I thought that was something that was important to get in front of people. To start the day off, to understand where we're coming from. For all those that want to label criticism of anything the government is doing as un-American, when literally that statement is un-American. It's incredible where we are today. But we have a lot to get into, as always. A lot to talk about in regard to the election, of course, which always seems to tie in with the bigger picture that we're getting into today. But a lot of really important things in regard to some stuff that the mainstream is touching on, but as usual, only one side of each part of the story is being touched by the other side, and the big picture is that they're all corrupt, and they're all doing it, and that's always the point here. And we're going to talk about something that was interesting that was shared with me in regard to some more tie-ins to people in power having control over the systems and the machines we're talking about, as well as more discussions about voter fraud and manipulations and stuff that you're going to find very, very important. And of course, we're going to talk about COVID-19 and the huge, huge discussion of the CDC seemingly flipping and saying again now masks work in every way. They also cure cancer and they also push out lollipops when you breathe. I mean, it's ridiculous how they just keep jumping back and forth and saying whatever they need to say politically in the moment, despite all of the evidence countering what they're saying. Interestingly, the studies they use in this to point their points also seem to counter what they're saying. What do you know? It's shocking because they know that most people won't actually look into it. Now, the Daily Post is the one that put this out, and I'll show you what they're just parroting what the CDC said without any due diligence, because when you actually look at it, you can clearly see that it's incredible what they're doing. And I will save it for when we get there. And a little more on the vaccine discussion as well, with some pretty alarming situations popping up left and right, seemingly everywhere we look. But to begin, let's start off with a couple of quick things that I wanted to point out. Now, not on this one, as we start in the middle of the show. Now, I wanted to point out, first of all, I thought this was really interesting that the BitChute just shared this with me today, sent me a notification saying, and I don't know if you can see this as it pops up, but this last award I got that everybody will get when they reach the marker, it's more of a marker, I have 1 million views on BitChute. Which I'd probably, there's probably, and a lot of people with that. It's not meant to, look at us. It's about, I think we need to realize that a lot more people are looking at content outside of YouTube than we realize. I mean, I've been focusing on other platforms. I've barely even focused on BitChute. We have 1 million views there. I'm sure a lot of people do. Just recognize that a lot are existing outside the infrastructure of YouTube. And it's quite exciting. Which I wanted to share. This is our goodbye YouTube party that James Corbett hosted with Derek Bros, Josh from World Alternative Media, Dan Dix from Press for Truth, and just basically celebrating the fact that we're all no longer on YouTube and that we genuinely see this shifting in a direction that is changing things, not just because of us, but because of just what's happening today. And it's exciting. As I said, this is the beginning, guys. This is not the end of something. This is the start. And everyone feels it, including YouTube. which is why they're desperately trying to be relevant again. I'm like trying to absorb themselves into mainstream media, which is probably the last thing that anybody should do when they're trying to improve themselves. But, you know, when you're an archaic system that doesn't know anything else, that's what you do. But here it is on BitChute, which I argue you should watch, or Odyssey elsewhere. But interestingly enough, I wanted to point out that Corb put it on YouTube, and it has almost 100,000 views. You know, and this is a sentiment that is circling, and it's going to get more popular. We need to realize that. Oh, I got, you know, that's incredible. I actually completely forgot that I had this in here. Now, this is just funny. This is something that was shared with me. I forget who was. Somebody shared with me on Twitter. And this is incredible, just on to open this up on the talk of manipulation, and whether we're talking elections or whatever else. I'm not kidding with you right now. This is supposed to be Hillary Clinton. This is from Reuters, and this is not a trick. I was like, this has to be fake. This is indeed the Reuters YouTube channel. Comments are turned off, and this says live, Hillary Clinton speaks at Georgetown University. Now, you can clearly look through this and see that there's no other person. It wasn't like, oops, that's a different person, and Hillary chimes in later. That is supposed to be Hillary Clinton, according to Reuters and, I guess, YouTube. Because I guess YouTube only censors things when they don't agree with the narrative, right? I mean, this is really crazy. So I don't know whether this was, I guess, Clinton trying to play a trick or not using a good enough body double, which we know that they all do. I shouldn't say we all, but guys, we must realize that happens quite frequently these days for many different reasons. But that is incredible. I'm going to try to follow up on this and figure out why this happened or what, you know, whether they're trying to fool us. I mean, look, Reuters, this is plainly ridiculous. That's obviously not Hillary Clinton. So I don't know if Reuters was fooled or what's working out here, but I'm going to follow up and let you know. But in any case, the fact that this can just be floated out, you know, on Reuters, a mainstream channel with no due diligence, and YouTube doesn't have a problem with it, despite it obviously not being her. They hit me for impersonating myself 5 different times that had nothing to do with that. But sure, this one's all good, right? I just found that to be absolutely ridiculous. But let's get right into the important stuff here. This is something that is circling today. Something that I'm seeing a lot. Of course, this is mainstream, and just, you know, hold your breath before we get to the full picture here, because it is more than just Donald Trump, which was the point. But of course, what you're seeing from the Democrat side of the two-party illusion is that Trump is taking money from his supporters and using it to pay off his debts, which seems to be true to a percentage. But the point here is that it's also happening on Biden's side. And I don't even actually see many people even talking about the Biden point. But you're sure as hell not going to see it, other than this Wall Street Journal at the very bottom pointing that out as well, which I find just painfully obvious that all of these people are hacks and not actually doing anything about truth, but ignoring things they don't want to share when they don't have to, or when it hurts their agenda. Which, okay, with the exception in this case of Wall Street Journal, but at the very bottom of the article, but it's not that long. So credit where it's due. They talked about it, which most mainstream will not. But this says Trump fundraising for legal challenges would also pay down debt. Now, I think this is something that supporters would really want to know. That when you're giving money to this campaign right now in regard to fighting legal challenges, that 50% of that is not going to fight legal challenges, but instead to pay off debt of the campaign, debt of the election campaign, debt of Trump's, you know, the efforts coming by Trump's administration. That ultimately will end up being paid off regardless of whether he wins or so on. So you're paying off things that have nothing to do with whether or not he's elected or whether or not they're fighting those legal challenges. It says President Trump is racing to raise money for an election official defense fund. Excuse me, an official election defense fund. But the fine print on the solicitations tells a different story. Half or more of any contribution will be used to retire debt from his re-election campaign. It's a weird way to phrase that, too. But it says starting early Wednesday, the campaign and the Republican National Committee have been sending dozens of daily texts, emails as well, saying that they need financial support to challenge voting procedures. Which, by the way, just on a side note, it seems increasingly less likely that Trump will win this, but it is definitely still possible. And I too am irritated by the overflow of discussion from the entire mainstream media acting like this is all over when there's states that have yet to even decide, right? Or the fact that there's legal challenges, or the fact that individual states have not even secured the state. The Secretary of State of the individual state still has to certify these things. It hasn't happened yet. So regardless of the point is they want you to begin to be comfortable with the media declaring who wins, regardless of the actually things panning out and actual official processes happening. That's crazy. But again, it's not new. It happens every time. It's only this year that seems that most people have been charged politically, or that some people this year weren't paying attention before and they are now. This is, I just did a show where I showed you all the way back to 2008. Same exact examples. Dead people voting, voter fraud, manipulation, CNN openly accusing the other side, but this year pretending it's a myth because they're ridiculous hacks that aren't actually fighting for truth. I mean, how dumb is it that you can look back and find an article from them right now openly pointing out and then verifying voter fraud, saying, look, here it is, the attorney general verified and so on and so on. But then this year pretend like the simple idea of voter fraud is a myth and fake news. They really think we're that stupid. And you know what? People that are falling for it apparently are. But I can't believe that they think by and large that none of us or enough of us won't be able to see this. But going forward, it says, quote, we must protect the election, says one of these campaign techs from Trump's son, saying, quote, my father's calling on you to help bolster our critical election defense fund. So the point being, it's all about fighting to basically, the more you donate, the closer we'll be to possibly winning. It's the kind of the insinuation. But it says, clicking through to the donation page, potential givers can view a disclaimer that 50% of any contribution will be used for general election campaign debt retirement and 50% of the campaign's recount to the campaign's recount account. It's weird the way I say that, too. Other Trump fundraising pitches in recent days ask for help to protect the integrity of this election, but lead to the donation page for Mr. Trump's Make America Great Again Committee. The fine print on the solicitations says 60% of the contribution helps the campaign retire debt. 40% goes to the RNC. Now, I should have read that secondarily before people assume that I'm only reading the Wall Street Journal and then assuming that they're correct. You know me better than that. Of course, I found where it actually is and show you what it actually says. Now, here it is on the Trump-Pence official election fund page. It's not a secret. It says it right here. Now, and to that effect, guys, it's not a secret. This isn't very hard to see. So to be completely honest, if people are not reading this stuff when they choose to donate, that's effectively on them. And that's exactly why they're probably not concerned about it. But this should be made aware that this is the broken way of our politics. It says 50% of each contribution up to a maximum of $2,800 to be designated toward Donald J. Trump's presidency 2020 general election account for election general election debt retirement until such debt is retired. 50% of each contribution up to that amount to be designated toward the recount account. So basically half of what you're giving is just simply going to pay off debt with up to a certain amount. And I argue the average person is almost all of them are going to be below that amount. So the average person is spending half of that money to just pay off debts that may have nothing to do with whether or not he's elected. I find that to be wildly dishonest, but that's not new though. That's what I'm trying to get people to understand. This is the same thing that's always happening. So people that are upset about this in regard to Trump are either being dishonest because they know it always happens, or they're not well versed enough going back to understand that it's always been there. But here's the, well, before I even get to it, to make that point again, realize, so in this case, in regard to the election recount, he's saying on the page that half of that is going to go towards paying off debt. But then on top of that, other fundraiser pitches saying protect the integrity of the election, which are also going out, lead to a separate donation page where 60% goes to the campaign while 40% goes to the RNC. So, you know, the point being that the almost half of this goes to the party that I argue most Trump supporters don't even actually agree with. Sort of, I mean, they agree with the candidate, not necessarily the political entity, like the whole idea that Trump's not a politician, right? Well, then why is he giving almost half of the money you're donating in this case to the club, to the politicians that have nothing to do with him, that have the future of whoever they pick next? And 60% of that just goes to help. And I missed the main point there. In this case, this scenario is much worse, because what they're doing is taking 60% to retire debt, even though they're claiming it's about protecting the integrity of the election, right? Apparently none of it is in this case. In this specific one where it's asking that 60% goes to the campaign retiring debt, 40% goes to the RNC, which you could then tangentially argue, well, that's protecting the election because we're supporting the RNC, right? This is how politicians work. And that's why he's a politician, just like the rest of them, because he's taking part in this. But here's the point. And I argue, of course, it's underneath the image, which most people probably won't even see. But it says Mr. Biden also is seeking new money for legal battles, because it's all happening to both right now. His legal fund solicitations don't include language about debt retirement, which obviously for obvious reasons. But the first $142,000 of any contribution is going directly to the DNC. You know, that corrupt institution that completely didn't do what that said, hey, vote because democracy, and then just didn't do what they said and chose what they wanted instead and completely stole it from who was actually voted for. Right. And then in an open court said, we don't have to do what the people want because we made that the case and it's in our documents right here. And the judge said, oh, you're right. Dismissed. Right? We prove in a court of law that we don't have democracy, and they go dismissed on those grounds. And then we fight for democracy. I mean, of course, we're talking about the primary. And we're talking about the DNC RNC scenarios here. And this was in the this was not primary. This was in regard to Sanders and Clinton and the whole thing. Now, the point being, though, that this we're talking about giving money to the exact same corrupt entities that absolutely 100% proven in court took effort to go against the will of the American people. But sure, donate to Joe Biden so we can continue to fund that corrupt institution. But then the next $2,800 over that goes to Biden's account. So let's say you just say, hey, here's $10. Well, that goes right to the DNC. Unless you're rich enough to donate $143,000 or $142.41, the rest of all of it goes to the DNC. That's crazy. Now, of course, neither Biden nor Trump responded to a comment about this, didn't want to respond. Here's also the Biden page, so you can see it for yourself. Contributions from persons, multi-candidate committees, shall be allocated in the following order. $142,000/$60,000 to the DNC. This is in regard to persons, multi-candidates. Okay, so as a person, anything under $142,000 and under goes to the DNC directly. $202,800 to Biden for president recount, and an additional funds to the DNC subject to applicable condition limits. So why are we supporting individual candidates when the bulk of the money that they're sending goes directly to the party? Because it's not about candidates, guys. This is about the continuation of a broken system that has nothing to do with any sense of democracy or representative government. You are being tricked, stolen from, and lied to on a daily basis. I can't stand how obvious it is, but to the same point, as we're literally staring at them doing this to the, like, I think obviously in this case, in regard to Trump supporters who believe they're helping him pay off the fighting for the election when half of that's going to just pay off debt, that's incredibly dishonest. But so too is Biden's aspect, which I argue Biden would be doing the exact same thing if he was in that position. The point is they always are doing this and they're always cheating and stealing, always. You just need to start paying attention to it and realize it's not the other side only, but it's all sides. It's your government. That's the point. And to make that even more clear, and no, this is no way supporting or endorsing Joe Rogan's show or Tulsi Gabbard. I've made my states clear on both of them, but this is still correct. And it's still an insight into exactly what we're talking about. Now, listen to what Gabbard says about what the title is here, what Tulsi Gabbard was told her first day in Congress. So listen to this and think about what we just talked about and think about if their intent or if their drive, what motivates their actions has anything to do with what's best for you or really it's about maintaining their power as the party.
This has been one of the most frustrating things that I've seen and experienced throughout my over 6 years in Congress that really started like when I first went up after I got elected. Where after every election happens, the new members of Congress, they go and they have what's called new member orientation. And they give you these books and here's the maps and here's where your office is and, you know, all the administrative and logistical stuff. But very quickly, I would say within the first few days, you know, where we first come in together as Democrats and Republicans, immediately, okay, Democrats go this way, Republicans go this way, immediately separated. And what
I mean, by who, right? I mean, I understand that there are like the entity that's controlling the flow of how that happens. These are the things we need to start looking into, not the people that get, quote, voted in and come and go over the years or congressional. Like, we need to ask who the real people are behind the scenes that are maintaining this broken machine. The people that are saying, no, you go over here and here's your booklet. We'll explain to you what you're supposed to be doing. I thought they were just elected by the people. Who was telling them what to do or where to go in general? Outside of like an orientation like she's talking about by saying like, you know, here's the coffee room, here's where you do this, here's where you can go, here's your office. What she's describing is much different. She's describing people telling you how to operate. That's not okay. When you're thinking you elect somebody to do what they want, what they think is right for you, not that they have to then check with somebody else in regard to what their going forward actions will be and how that affects the party. That's what she's talking about.
We're told right off the bat is, look, this is about getting wins for our political party. And if you work with the Republican, then that's going to hurt the party, especially if you work with a Republican that the Democratic Party is trying to take out. Forget the substance of the idea. Forget the substance of the bill. And this happens on the opposite.
Forget whether or not that bill is monumentally important to the survival of the American way of life. Forget whether that bill is important to feeding families or making sure people aren't being, I mean, forget whatever it is. That is secondary, as I think she goes on to say, to whether or not your party is winning. So aren't these people supposed to be at all costs doing what's best for their constituents? Can we not see that that's never, ever been the case? Or at the very least, it's very clearly not the case now. If you can't admit that to yourself, you're holding on to something that's either, you're holding on to a dying idea, if it's ever been there to begin with.
Opposite side as well, Republicans with Democrats, both political parties are guilty of this, where they're really putting the interests of the political party ahead of the people who just voted for us to go and serve them. And not just the Democrats who voted for me, but yes, the independents and the Republicans, both who voted for me or who didn't, but who I serve as part of my constituency. And I've continued to see this where, you know, you'll have a bill that because it's a Democrat bill, Republicans will vote against it, substance aside, or Republican bill, Democrats will vote against it just because it's a Republican bill. But then, hey, if they come in and, you know, a month or a year later introduce the same bill or a similar bill, but now because it's a Democratic bill, okay, everybody, hey, let's go and support this legislation.
Do you realize how much that is affecting you? Do you realize just the fact that they're choosing not to do something, regardless of how important it is, because it's not their party, then they later do it again and vote on it again and talk about it again. That, you know, think the time that's being wasted, the tax dollars that are being wasted, the fact that there's so many other things that could be focused on while they're playing this game back and forth of passing the same bill or fighting against the same bill. You guys must be able to see that these people do not care about you. If this is allowed to happen, and it very clearly is, what's the issue here? They do not care, or at the very least, your interests are not the most important thing to them, despite that being the only thing they should be caring about.
Inflation. You can imagine why there is so much gridlock in Washington, why nothing really gets done, and ultimately how this divisiveness and this hyperpartisanship is hurting the ability for the needs of the American people to be served.
Exactly. And quite frankly, the way that Tulsi Gabbard kind of just went against what she was doing and saying, kind of, you know, endorsing somebody like, all of them, in my opinion, are part of this problem. Now, that doesn't mean that I think that Tulsi Gabbard is a bad, I don't know these people, but my intention, my perspective of her when she was starting this out was that she's a damn good candidate. But the way that she acted and the way that she stopped and the way that she fell right back into line shows me, in my opinion, it was probably an illusion. But you know what? It doesn't change. I hope that she is what people thought she was. But I just don't see any evidence of that because of the way things are going forward. You know, the idea that you can work within the system to change the system is a fallacy in my eyes. The system's broken. Maybe if it was working, maybe. But the system is made to not work exactly the way that she just described it. So when we see things like this, we need to realize that there's a reason that half of your money, when you're being told it's about helping the candidate, is in fact going to the party. Because the party and whatever that ruling structure is behind it, the unelected power structure, they are the ones controlling what's happening. We must see that by now. Now, on that same general note, somebody sent me this tweet that I thought was interesting that I would say, okay, and here's the thing is that this is the problem with the way a lot of people think today. You guys know that I'm no fan of Trump. I'm no fan of the system. I'm no fan of Biden either. I think they're all equally bad. But the problem is that people who are stuck in that system and the two-party illusion will look and see this person with MAGA, whatever in her name, and immediately disregard it. That's ignorant. Because you don't know what they have to say, whether or not they have biases, which we all do. But nonetheless, somebody sent this to me and I said, okay, I read it and I said, well, that's interesting. that's worth my time to look in and see if there's any validity to it. Now, right off the bat, the only thing that's wrong, in my opinion, here is the way it's described as owning the same people owning the same thing. That's not exactly the case, as well as the fact that William Kennard is not the director, as far as I can tell. That doesn't change the fact that what she pointed out, as partially incorrect as it may be, is actually quite interesting. I'll read her thing first. It says, William Kennard, director of Staple Street Capital, which, by the way, I don't think he's not the director, that owns Dominion, was named AT&T chairman of the board November 6th after the election. AT&T owns CNN. The same people who there's a tie in there in regard to the voting machines and the people that have control over them and the people who have control over CNN. I find that to be quite interesting, you know, if it turned out to be true. And sure enough, as you go, well, first of all, just to see, Stephen D. Owens appears to be the managing director. However, William Kennard, the person that she's referencing, is indeed seemingly the highest entity on the executive board of Staple Street Capital. Okay. Now, Staple Street Capital acquired Domain Voting Systems in 2018. As you can see, July 16th, 2018, Dominion Voting Systems announces that it has been acquired by its management team in Staple Street Capital, a leading New York-based middle market private equity firm. All these private equity firms, like we're talking about with BlackRock and all these different companies out there that are just massive equity firms, I'm beginning to see a common thread here between these companies and their whole public-private aspect, where you can't really look into what they're doing because they're not governments or whatever. It's a shell game. These are companies that are clearly tied in with the governments that are controlling and acting with no obligation to the American people, as if they actually care about that anyway. But okay, so we see William Kennard on the executive board at the top of Staple Street Capital, which in 2018 purchased Dominion Voting Systems, which was used in the majority of states in the United States during this last election. Okay. Now, on the same point, in November 6th, days after the election, where this Dominion voting machine issue was a very big focal point, which some would argue was the reason that this thing, cheated, flipped, fraud, whatever else. And they think that that's the fault. And there's something to that. So 2 days after that, the person who is the head of the executive board of the company that owns the Dominion voting machines is appointed chairman of the board of AT&T. Selected William E. Kennard to serve as its chairman. Okay, now it's interesting. And here's just the same thing. Warner Media, this is on November 6th. AT&T names William Kennard. So we're clear on this. CNN is CNN's parent company, AT&T. Right. This is just an article pointing this out, just so we can see that is the case. Time Warner was renamed Warner Media. CNN is part of Warner Media. So the point is, this boils down to the reality that we have somebody who is in a leading position on the equity firm that owns the voting machines. And he's also at the lead, now the chairman of the board of the company that owns CNN. So that's a very clear quote. First of all, just the simple idea that these people have this controlling entities in positions that basically control the machines, that control the software, that control the media that represents what's actually happening, and then the company that owns that media company. And we're supposed to pretend like that's not an obvious, like the idea that that is not, whether it's a conflict of interest or just simply a point of interest in regard to a very contentious issue right now, where you can see the media and how they're misrepresenting the situation and ask, okay, well, why is that happening? And we also should ask the question, if this person was given this job 2 days after an election where the systems that his company owns have a clear role in potentially cheating, as many would think, I'm not saying one way or the other, that's something that's in the air right now, need to ask the question of whether we're seeing this appointment for a reason. Because if something were to have happened, and whether this is a quid pro quo kind of a thing. Now, that is not a ridiculous question to ask. Right? The mainstream will ask far more baseless and ridiculous questions based on things that they want to push into your mind. But when we have a trail of evidence, not proof, but evidence of interesting things, and we just ask the question, they go, conspiracy theory, as they're the leading purveyors of the most ridiculous. I don't even like to use the term, because I think conspiracy theories are a logical thing. Conspiracies happen. People conspire about bettering their lives at the expense of others. And to theorize about how they're doing that is common sense. But anyway, to the point is, I found it interesting. So yeah, not the director. I wouldn't say that they own them necessarily, but it's a very interesting point to see that this man is in a leading position on both companies. And then just ask yourself how crazy it is that this is the kind of control that we can see people have. But then don't forget that we also talked about Dominion voting and how the Delaney Project from the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative in 2014, was working with Dominion voting on this project, providing emerging and post-conflict democracies with access to voting technology. So it's almost like this was the pilot project of their manipulating votes, right? I don't think for one second that the Clinton Global Initiative had a direction of actually helping democracies, because everything that that Clinton specifically as Secretary of State and the Clinton Foundation did was destroy these things. If you actually listen to anybody from Haiti about what actually happened there, they pretended to help these people, got billions of dollars, and stole the vast majority of it. You can ask Pete, that's why people involved with the Haitian government during this time period that were calling out what they were doing suddenly went mysteriously dead, or, you know, killed themselves in a mysterious accident, or so on. It's very, very ridiculous. As well as the doctor who worked with the Clinton Foundation in Haiti and tried to blow the whistle and then apparently shot himself in the chest. I mean, this is no joke, guys. I mean, well, since I'm bringing this up, I mean, I should remember to include this just because of how important and obvious this is. I want to have this up so I don't forget to include it. I wrote this one myself a while back about this specifically. People gave me a hard time about writing Doctor Who in the title. Doctor Who exposed Clinton Foundation corruption in Haiti found dead. I'll include this for you guys to watch. I mean, this guy was about to blow the whistle. He was openly speaking out about how the Clinton Foundation stole money and how they didn't do what they're supposed to and how they sent bad materials and on and on and on. Point being that this is the idea that they went there and they did these things in general, these machines to help people while they were destroying countries and stealing from people. I mean, at the end of the day, it's an obvious tie to some very corrupt people. And this is the company that now we are now seeing tied in with this huge scandal. And then you can also see people tied in and controlling CNN who are at the board of this, of the company that owns Dominion voting. It's quite ridiculous. But then don't forget, we have Smartmatic software that was used. And of course, that Smartmatic software is owned by Lord Mark Mollick Brown, who is connected to George Soros through the Open Society Foundation. He's in fact the chairman of the board, I believe, on the Open Society Foundation, if not just, yeah, he's the chairman. Now, here's the interesting part. This is where that page was. I went to go look, and I said, oh, I was going to show you again because I talked about it yesterday. And I said, oh, look at that. They deleted the page. Why would they do that? But lucky for you guys, I still have it on the video that I just did. Sorry for you, Smartmatic, and your covering up of information. Lord Mark Mollick Brown, as you can see, it says, other positions have included vice chairman of George Soros' investment funds. Yeah, so it's the same vice chairman. So it wasn't chairman of the board, excuse me. Vice chairman of George Soros' Open Society Institute. Vice president of the World Bank. Lead international partner at Sawyer Miller. I mean, this guy has a lot of things to point out. But the fact that he's on the vice chairman of the Open Society Institute and the vice chairman of George Soros' investment funds is ridiculous. Understanding the tie-ins with this and the ties to the Clintons and their agendas and their efforts and their open speaking out against the people that are running in political positions, but they have influence over the software. And then again, make sure you understand that page is gone. We're talking a day ago, we talked about this and Smartmatic deletes the page. Why? How do we not see that people are actively covering up what's going on right now? And I'm not just talking about the election, guys. This is everywhere. And these people are actually scrubbing the internet right now. Pretty nuts. But as always, this is in here, and I'll include it so you guys can see it for yourself. Take screenshots, show people that they're censoring what's going on. But this is where it gets even more ridiculous. I've talked about the Diebold machines. I've talked about Clint Curtis and the testifying about being paid to cheat and how these machines have been in the kind of focal point of manipulation forever. Election after election. I just went over how the whole idea of people dead voting in the past and how every single 4 years, the idea of the Pennsylvania, you know, in Philadelphia, bad things happen. Every 4 years, that conversation comes up. Every 4 years, there's allegations of Philadelphia fraud and election ballots fraud and all this stuff. And every 4 years, nothing happens. But sure, let's pretend like it's unprecedented this year. And that's all. This is our broken system. And really the point, as people keep saying, it's not really broken. It's operating exactly the way that they want it to. But it's broken in the way that Americans think it's supposed to work. Now this goes even further. And this, I think, will really floor some people. It says the market for, and understand, this is October 28th, 2019. The market for voting machines is broken, ProPublica says. Yet this company has thrived in it. What does that tell you? We're talking about ES&S, as well as Diebold, as well as Dominion Voting. Now it says, in Georgia, where the race for governor had drawn national interest amid concerns about election integrity, ES&S-owned technology was in use when more than 150,000 voters inexplicably did not cast a vote for lieutenant governor, in part because the aged ES&S-managed machines did not produce paper backups. It wasn't clear whether mechanical or human errors were to blame. Litigation surrounding the vote endures to this very day. Right, because this is a new thing, right? Voting machines having these issues and litigation and all, brand new, unprecedented. Keep telling yourselves that. In India, ES&S's systems were plagued by mishaps at the local level. In Johnson County, for instance, the company's brand new machines faltered in ways that made it difficult to know whether some people had voted more than once. Good thing we're still using them, huh? The uneven performance by ES&S in 2018, however, did little to dent its position as one of the most popular and powerful voting technology companies in the U.S. Any number of prior controversies hadn't either. So first of all, before we even get to Dominion and where we are now, we're talking about a company that had issues for more than a decade. Constant litigation, constant accusations, constant proof of glitches over and over and over. And it's always just, oh, it's a glitch. Oh, it's a computer glitch, right? That's probably why they want to continue to use these things, because you can't call a person cheating a computer glitch, right? Well, in this case, they continued to use them year after year, election after election, not new at all. And so the question should be why? Not when there's plenty of other groups, plenty of other technologies, but yet they continue. Well, this article gives you insight. It says the uneven performance. Oh, it says the vote in 2006, even going further back in Sarasota, Florida, was just one. Their ES&S machines lost around 18,000 votes. It is still unclear why. To this very day, they just up and lost 18,000 votes and no one knows why. But sure, let's make sure we use those machines the next time. That happened. A lawsuit followed that ultimately resolved very little. Does that sound familiar? Despite such stumbles, ES&S, based in Omaha, Nebraska, and employing roughly 500 people, controls about 50% of the country's election system market. The company says, according to them, some 70 million Americans vote using this company's equipment that is constantly riddled with problems. It says a ProPublica examination of ES&S shows that it fought hard to keep its dominance in the face of repeated controversies. The company has a reputation among both its competitors and election officials for, guess what, routinely going to court when it fails to win contracts or has them taken away, suing voting jurisdictions, rivals, advocates for greater election security, and others. So they lose a contract because their system's not working, and instead of using the better company, they're allowed to sue based on greater election security? Does that sound like a legitimate process to you? Like, that's not even a free market. They're not allowing the actual system to work out where they say, look, this company doesn't have controversy. This company doesn't have all kinds of glitches and problems. Let's give them the contract. ES&S sues, and they continue to win in this way. ES&S lawsuits and threats of lawsuits have helped delay or thwart progress toward better voting technology, even when the litigation is unsuccessful. More than 24 election officials and voting technology experts said this in interviews. So let's just make sure that's clear. So this is a company that is riddled with problems, that keeps breaking down, that keeps having voting votes going missing, wrong things happening, votes being flipped. That's happened numerous times with these machines. Think about that. And instead of changing anything, when they try to, ES&S sues and delays the process, and they continue to use these same broken machines. This is since 2006 and before. So is this a new problem, or is this the corruption of this government continuing to allow to fester year after year after year, and allowing this company that clearly has ties to people in high places to continue to control the voting machine situation? Well, it says ES&S is owned by the McCarthy Group, a private equity firm. What do you know? And thus its financial records, revenue, profits, and salaries are not public. To my exact point. Good thing we get to know who this quiet, shadowy firm that controls 70% of our voting machines does at all, or what they think of, what they care about. I mean, nothing. You don't get to know about them at all. You don't get to any insight. And when people try, they get attacked. It says ES&S's chief competitors, Hart, InterCivic, and Dominion, are not strangers to mishaps and aggressive tactics. Dominion's most recent voting technology failed certification in Texas. By the way, again, that's what was used this year predominantly, even though it clearly has its own problems. And the state also saw hundreds of aging heart machines confusing voters and leading to accusations of vote flipping. Right, but understand that Heart Civic and Dominion are both being used right now. I believe that Dominion was the majority this year, but those are still being used. Do you hear what they just said? Because of hundreds of machines, hundreds, confusing voters and leading to flipping of votes. This is ridiculous. And what this is beginning to materialize in my mind is this dominance that there is Dominion, perfect, this dominance over these voting machines and the control that gives whoever does. And we're clearly seeing who does and what companies have this control over this. And the fact that these entities are tied to what we're talking about, to the exact machines, the company, and the software that's being used, tied to people that we're talking about here. I mean, this stuff is really obvious, and we're seeing a kind of control network around these voting machines and not allowing things to shift, right? This company itself sued for years over and over to keep their dominance. And of course, then we see a shift, but you begin to realize that it's sort of one and the same, that the transition away from this company was more of an illusion. What does that sound like? It actually brought to mind my idea that what I've been mentioning lately in regard to Standard Oil, right? The breakup of the monopoly, right? James Corbett is the best person to look in for this topic, that they broke up Standard Oil under the guise that it was better for the people because it was a monopoly. In secret, that was what they wanted the whole time. Problem, reaction, solution. And they trick you into thinking you got what you wanted, and it effectively made them the most powerful people on the planet. Now, as it goes on to say, in August 2018, Louisiana announced it would replace its old voting machines and awarded a $95 million contract to a rival of ES&S, which was the lowest bidder. Right? So it saved money for the taxpayer and the machines worked better. ES&S filed a complaint, which I don't even know why this is possible. Is this business or are we in like grade school? Like, are you allowed to just be like, they're not being fair? I don't understand. I think this is a special circumstance because of its voting machines and there's government and contracts involved. Like, this is crazy. They filed a complaint that accused the state of writing its request for proposals so that only the other company's machines would satisfy the terms. Right? What is this, social justice in business? How in the world does this make sense? Who cares whether they wrote the contract? They can write the contract however the hell they want because they're trying to get the best outcome for the American people. But no, this company with a lesser product that with a shoddy track record just gets to accuse them of making the contract too difficult, and apparently it works out in their favor. This is outrageous. But it says shortly after, John Governor Bel Edwards canceled the deal because they wrote a complaint accusing them of, I guess, making the proposal too difficult for them to achieve. This is unbelievable. But they canceled the deal, effectively siding with ES&S, and guess what? Forcing the state to start the process all over again. It says, quote, the governor's administration just sided with a company that was $40 million more expensive. Louisiana Secretary of State Kyle Ardoin said in a statement after the cancellation. In the statement, the governor's office said that the cancellation was justified. The office also laid the blame at the feet of the Secretary of State's office, the person who was calling them out, what do you know, which it said added additional requirements to the bid just days before the responses were due. Why is that bad? Aren't we supposed to want the best possible thing? And if he added more requirements, isn't that a better thing? Apparently not. Apparently, it costs $40 million more for a less effective product. That sound fair? Does that sound correct? Or does that sound like the classic corruption that we see consuming this country? Now, it says this is the best part. Louisiana campaign finance records show that ES&S lobbyist in Baton Rouge has donated $13,250 to Edwards' campaign. Ah, and it all becomes clear. Edwards is okay spending $40 million more of your money on a machine that is less effective because he got $13,000 from the company that is pushing him to use those machines. This is how your country operates. This is not new. This is exactly how lobbying is supposed to work. And it's exactly why our system is so broken and decrepit, because they are continuing to cheat you at every turn and calling it progress. Louisiana still has not obtained new voting machines. That's the biggest joke of all. Do you realize we're talking about 2006 and going forward, and because of the lawsuits and the accusations and claims, like today, they still do not have new voting machines. And this is, understand, this is in October 2019. when this is written, and it says the state is expected to have cast ballots in 2020 on the same machines it's had since 2005. That's incredible. Now, I forget whether or not they're one of the ones that went over to Dominion. Regardless, up until this year before that anyway, they continued to use them from 2005 just because this company was buying off politicians. Or, excuse me, lobbying. Which I don't know why in the world a voting machine company should be able to give money to candidates on which will be voted or who will be voted for on these machines. Is that not the most ridiculous thing? Again, that's exactly how our broken system works. Now it says, it gets better, Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon is among a number of legislators in October of 2019 who are pushing the federal government to better oversee the quality of local election technology from voting machines to voter registration databases. So this is not new. People are going, we need to make this better. And then they get attacked by a company saying, you're not being fair. ES&S maintains there is no need for tighter regulation or oversight of its business. So because not only do we cannot see what they're doing, we can't see their books, we can't see, right? It's a private public idea. So we're not allowed to see any oversight or insight under the machines that decide who is president, so we're told. And when politicians who are elected by people in this country stand up and say, we need more oversight, this private company says, no, you don't need that. And then when they try to go to another company because they don't like that, well, they sue them or complain, and it stays there. Do you see where this is going? There's something fishy going on here, obviously, for why the same company has maintained the situation for so long, despite the people and the representatives we're told arguing that it's broken. Wyden says the market is broken. Markets work well when you have tough standards, when you have real regulations and vigorous oversight, and here you have none of that. You have none of that. Make sure you hear what he just said. If we don't have any oversight or regulation on the voting machines that elect your president, what are we talking about? Do you realize how obviously possible it is for someone to have influence over that if you're not being regulated or have any oversight of government in regard to what they're doing and the machines they're making? And that's why you can see people like Soros and Clinton and AT&T and CNN having ties to the very machines that they're using to vote and so, you know, our so-called democracy. It's incredible. But it says Bob Orsovich of Omaha is the founder of ES&S. Orsovich later left ES&S in the hands of his first hire, his brother Todd. Now, this is early on in the company. He went on to run Global Elections Systems, the voting machine arm of Diebold. What do you know? So you see how this works? So this guy was in ES&S, a company that is riddled with problems, constantly getting called fraudulent. Everyone's pointing out they're suing people and casting complaints to keep their control. The main guy breaks off and starts Diebold. You know, that company that's completely tied up and focal point of all these past election frauds and the very company that Clint Curtis testified to cheat, that they were cheating on these machines. Does that surprise anybody that this guy broke off and started another company that was also committing fraud? And as far as it appears, and those are supposed to appear to be two separate things, but ultimately the same family. Is that not surprising at all? But it says it's a major security and financial technology for company. Now it says in 2003, Diebold CEO, who remember is the brother of the guy running the ES&S, caused a controversy when he became the top fundraiser for George W. Bush. Actually, wait, I want to pull that back. I don't know whether the CEO might have been different in 2003 than the owner. Regardless, we're still talking about the same company. Diebold CEO in 2003, a company that was started by the brother of the company that's ES&S that's riddled with fraud, caused a controversy when, guess what? He became the top fundraiser for George W. Bush. And promised to help Ohio, quote, deliver its electoral votes to the president. How is that even allowable? And Diebold is one of the focal points of one of the biggest scams. I mean, I'm going to show you the video again in a second. And here is the CEO of that company admitting that he is on the side of one of the candidates. Of course, that ended up going to Bush. Big surprise. The dispute and a host of issues involving the effectiveness of the technology led Diebold to sell off the voting business in 2009. So, surprise. Shocker. ES&S purchased many of the global election system machines and contracts. And as a result, it controlled some 70% of the voting technology market at the time. So let's just quickly rehash that. It's a company that's broken and fraudulent and being accused of such by politicians. The brother breaks off and starts another company that gets caught up in a lot of the same exact things. So now it appears there's different systems vying for control. Then, after that Diebold situation becomes the focal point of Bush's election, then they leave and sell back to ES&S, which is suddenly now controlling 70% of the market, despite the fact that earlier on, before Diebold broke off, they were the biggest problem and people were recognizing it everywhere and they couldn't get rid of them. But now at this point in October, before 2020, they controlled 70% of the technology market. You getting the picture? This has nothing to do with what's best, what's most effective. This is politics. This is people in political positions controlling the outcome of how of the contracts I'm talking about. But then realize with the potential influence over the companies which are using them, which don't have any regulation or oversight, it's a no-brainer to ask whether or not they're having influence over the outcome of these machines. Then it says ES&S and the other two major companies, Dominion, which has about 30% of the market, and Hart InterCivic, which has about 15%, have similar business models. So the point is, if you go back up here and talk about how Hart and these groups are these old machines were flipping votes for people and so on, well, it turns out they're still working and they're still active and they work about the same. There's more in here, by the way, that I hope you will go through and read. But you guys, this is not old. This is from 2019, October. And they're straight up telling you, this doesn't work. These companies are not doing what's best for you. And we don't even have regulation or oversight over the companies which execute your voting machines. That is just the most farcical thing I've ever heard in my life. And we're supposed to pretend like it's unacceptable to call out this voter fraud? Here's just the proof of, you can see it right here. The company announced Thursday that Premier Election Solutions, Diebold's beleaguered voting machine division, has been acquired by ES&S. Right? So you have Diebold as part of that. And now you have basically between Dominion and which is ES&S, but Diebold machines, you control 90% of the voting market in this country. 90%. That's incredible. And all of them tie back to companies with bad records of doing the wrong thing. And don't forget this.
There are programs that can be used to secretly fix elections.
Yes.
How do you know that to be the case? Mr. Curtis, are there programs that can be used to secretly fix elections?
Yes.
How do you know that to be the case?
Because in October of 2000, I wrote a prototype for President Congressman Tom Feeney at the company I worked for in Oviedo, Florida, that did just that.
And would that program that you designed be something that elections officials could detect?
They'd never see it.
Now, I've talked about this many times, and you can watch the whole thing. You can look it up. It's not hard to find. He's talking about Diebold machines, right? So in 2008, he is testifying that Diebold machines were being used to cheat, and they went on to continue to be used year after year after year until they eventually just sold them to ES&S, who already has a very shoddy track record of doing exactly the same thing. Democracy, right? No oversight, no regulation, democracy. I just keep screaming democracy and keep your eyes closed and maybe it'll work out. It's just very sad that people are too childish, petty, and politically oriented to realize when they're being lied to, because it's about your side winning instead of being an adult and recognizing that they are cheating us and stealing from us and hurting the future of your family. Here's another article from, I believe this was actually the Free Thought Project. Yeah, Matt Agarist. It's on the Mint Press News website, but it says in 2006, the documentary Hacking Democracy exposed Diebold and other roles in their role in rigging elections with their electronic voting machines. This is again, Clint Curtis is the American attorney, computer programmer, and ex-employee of NASA, who also exposed election hacking. I mean, this is not a secret, but yet here we are acting like this is unprecedented today. It's very sad. Now, this is the article that I pointed out than the last show that I want to just read a little bit more on. Another great one from Whitney Webb. Suspect AI software verified mail-in ballots with little human oversight in key battleground states. The point being, add this on top of what we just went over. of the people who own these companies, who have control over the companies that own these machines, the machines themselves and the software itself having ties to people that obviously have political motivations, the fact that the machines have no regulation, no oversight with people and companies that have a track record of cheating and manipulating, and then you add on top of that AI software used for the mail-in ballots, with little oversight. And of course, as it says here, untested AI software was used to verify mail-in ballot signatures in highly contested localities like Clark County, Nevada. The company that produces it has close ties to Lockheed Martin, Microsoft, and its founder has a bone to pick with Donald Trump. Now remember, Lockheed Martin is the company that Esper used to work with, and he was just weirdly fired. So I'm wondering whether there's a connection there, whether this company that has close ties to Lockheed Martin, which, you know, the argument is this is, you know, erring on the side of the Democrats. Maybe there's something there. You know, I've been unable to find any connection. But this is interesting nonetheless. This is just one more aspect of lack of oversight and manipulation. Now, it says few have examined the role of the little-known Silicon Valley company, of course, whose artificial intelligence algorithm was used to accept or reject ballots in highly contested states such as Nevada. Now, what I was going to say, hold on, I thought of something up here. Well, I guess I'll go. I remember I didn't highlight it. Now I just forgot it again. Untested AI software was used to verify mail-in ballot signatures. Oh, that's what it was. That she makes a point in the article that there's a big the signatures that are done on paper versus ones that are done online are quite different in regard to how this thing reads it. And that's one of the biggest issues with this that they didn't consider or didn't care to. I just want to make sure that was clear because I don't think I highlighted it. And that's an interesting point. The point is that either this was just a mishap or another way to use mistakes to cover for cheating, which is all, as I always say, they would much rather be seen as incompetent than criminal. But in Nevada, as I keep pointing out, is a very important part of all this. Now that company, Periscript, has a long-standing cozy ties to defense contractors such as Lockheed Martin and Microsoft, in addition to being a contractor to the U.S. Postal Service, which seems interesting, right? That keeps popping up in these discussions. Now, Periscript's AI software was used during the election in at least 8 states for matching signatures on ballot envelopes with those in government databases in order to ease the workload of staff enforcing voter signature rules resulting from the influx of mail-in ballots. Reuters, which reported on the use of the technology, asked the company to provide a list of counties and states using its software for the 2020 election. Periscript declined. Exactly the same kind of thing we're seeing from the voting machines. Why is it that we don't have any insight into this? If these companies are being used to ultimately decide who wins, or at the very least count these votes, which does influence the election, that should be the most transparent thing of all time. Every American should be able to see and look how the process works. That's how we're told this is supposed to go. But now, because of public-private partnerships, they're increasingly, you know, outsourcing, as we're being told, all of this. But really, they're just shell companies for the government. And so they're keeping, basically, it's the government acting like it's something else, so you can't have oversight over the government, which is exactly what your right is, that they're taking away from you. Add it to the growing list. Declined to supply the list. No, we're not going to show you what counties we worked in. Why would they do that? It says, instead, replying that their clients, quote, included 20 of the top 100 counties by registered voters, which is kind of the point anyway. People are curious whether it's in important states that would make a difference, and obviously they were. It says, despite not receiving the official list from Periscript, Reuters was able to compile its own partial list, which revealed that several counties in Florida, Colorado, Washington, and Utah, among others, utilized the AI software to determine the validity of ballots. Reuters also reported that Clark County, Nevada, which is one of the hot spots of the litigation between the Trump and Biden campaigns, and fraud allegations, was one that used the software. What do you know? Many counties allowing the software to approve anywhere from 20 to 75% of mail-in ballots as acceptable. That's pretty crazy. At the very least, we should be able to see how this is operating and not some kind of shadowy group that's saying, this is what happened, trust us. Does that sound familiar? Prior to the election, concerns were raised regarding the efficacy of AI signature re-verification software for mail-in ballots. Right? I mean, just realize that this is something that was being, people were concerned about this, saying, well, this doesn't, we don't know if this works properly. And we did it anyway. Kyle Wiggers, a journalist who covers AI for VentureBeat, noted, quote, we don't have benchmarks from the systems that are in use to verify signatures on these mail-in ballots. He says, we basically have to go by what the manufacturers of the systems are telling us, which is that the systems are working and accurate. So yet again, we have another company, which she goes on to point out, and she says has ties to the very people who are driving forward all of this. Silicon Valley, Microsoft. So at the end of the day, we have another company saying, trust us, this is how it's working. It's accurate. But politicians and American people don't have the right to see that it does. This is like a long form, slow moving coup of Silicon Valley over our country, or a technocratic coup of our country. One by one, step by step, they are public private partnering us out away from having any influence over anything. The small amount that we still hang on to, if that. It's just incredible to me how clear all this is. Now there was a couple more parts here. I just want, there's a lot in here that I really hope you'll take the time to read. But as it says, in addition to Lockheed Martin, Paris Group enjoys partnerships with other prominent companies and longstanding ties to U.S. intelligence. Weird. So maybe it's a U.S. intelligence cutout, or maybe it's an Israeli U.S. intelligence cutout, like so many of these public-private partnerships. And that company has the ability to influence mail-in ballots, and we're not allowed to see, and they won't even tell us what counties they worked in because it's a public-private partnership. Does that sound like democracy? It says, for instance, Periscript is a partner of Hewlett-Packard, a company who has close ties to the CIA and its venture capital arm in Qtel, particularly under the leadership of Carly Fiorina. It is an open secret. But you can see, you know, the idea that people of the same walk, the same kind of groups that we're constantly concerned about having influence over all of this, and they all lead back to the same entities. But sure, we're conspiracy theorists. Don't listen until next time when CNN suddenly says voter fraud because it's a Republican they can point to. Or vice versa. Same deal. The reason why now one side's calling it out, not the other. Constant. And of course, you know, just to add a little humor in there. Don't worry, though, because YouTube wanted to make sure you saw that robust safeguards help ensure the integrity of elections and results. Learn more. That's just period. Right? It's like, don't worry about the issues we're seeing. Robust safeguards help ensure the integrity. Robust safeguards help ensure the integrity of elections. Like, it's just bombarding you everywhere. We're safe. Integrity, integrity. Like, it's just so funny how desperate they are to not let you see what's going on. Right? I mean, look, no, just to insert a statement like that is so obviously one-sided. If they were just about, I mean, this shows you that they have intentions. They have an agenda. It is to make sure that we do not question the integrity of the elections, even if there's every reason to question the integrity of the elections. Does that seem like a partisan public? It means that they're publishers, right? They have intentions, and they're controlling the flow of information. That's what they are. That's why hashtag boycott YouTube, because they're the government. They're stealing from you. They're taking from you. They're using your content to profit for themselves, and then they're just removing you when they feel it's time. That's the last thing anybody should want to be a part of. And of course, as Tom Longo points out, no, sweetheart. And this is from an article saying Arizona Secretary of State rejects independent analysis of voting data. Really? So there's every reason that we should be asking this now. And she's just saying, we're not going to do it. Rejecting independent analysis because that's what transparency is about. That's what democracy looks like. Apparently, she says, no, the exact opposite would happen. It would clear up any misconceptions of those baseless theories and prove that you have run a tight ship. You should welcome independent auditing of your results. In fact, it should be mandatory. The fact that people are going, no, I'm not going to allow it because that's going to denigrate the integrity of our election. That's just nonsense to hide something. There's no reason you shouldn't want independent analysis. But here we are. And of course, let's jump over to COVID-19 because this is an important discussion that won't go away. And this is a huge, huge article from Derek Bros that is very, very important to all of this. Now, this is Joe Biden's coronavirus task force is a Rockefeller Council, is a Rockefeller Council on Foreign Relations Gates Foundation swamp. And it absolutely is. And it's incredible. Now, first thing I wanted to point out is the fact that Derek Bros has integrity. Right, the idea that that this article is put out, and both and myself as well, missed a mistake. Right, as the editor, I missed it myself as well. And of course, we decided that we are not going to just delete it and move forward as if no one saw it, because that's not what real journalists and real reporters do. Right, if you're actually here for the truth and you believe in the integrity, the journalistic integrity, the what we're supposed to be doing, well, when something happens and you put something down that ends up being incorrect, or you remove something, or you alter the article, you are absolutely required to put that on the article to say, hey, this happened, this changed, here's our mistake. But that never happens anymore. I'm constantly watching as this isn't journalism, but just to the same point, right? Just constantly deleting and changing what they want. But if you look at groups like the New York Times, the Washington Post, or any mainstream article, I've seen hundreds of examples just from the beginning of the well, let's just say just from this year, make it easy, of regularly altering content, removing paragraphs, changing what they say, changing the title, and not even putting an asterisk, nothing, saying, pretending like that's the way it was the whole time. But as this says, and this is a very small thing that realistically we could have just removed and it wouldn't have changed the article, but it says a previous version of the article mistakenly identified Dr. Robert Rodriguez as a member of the Gates Foundation who was Miguel Rodriguez. And we apologize for any confusion, right? That's what should happen. And you will never see that on the mainstream media anymore because they're not really about the truth. And I think we all need to see that. But the point being, a lot of these things are really alarming. And first of all, Robert Rodriguez himself has some obvious interesting ties, but this focal point was on specific things, right? Now, what we're talking about here is it says the connections to all of these groups, and this is Joe Biden's task force if and when he becomes president, which has not happened yet, and pointing out why all of these are some of the work. I mean, it's realistically, it's about just as bad as Donald Trump's for the most part. They're all, well, I would argue this one's a little worse because of the ties to, overt ties to the Gates groups and people like that, but realize again that these are just the same thing. It's the same idea driving in the same direction. It says, for starters, at least six members of the 13-member task force have worked directly with Gates or the Gates Foundation, while at least three others have tangential connections to Gates. Several members also have connections to the Rockefeller Foundation, which is also infamous for shaping international health policy. Now, I just want to cover a couple of them that I thought were really relevant. Please take the time to read this for yourself. Dr. Atul Gawande is professor of surgery at served as a senior advisor in the Department of Health and Human Services in the Clinton administration. Right? That is an infamous time to be there, and especially realize that it's the Health and Human Services entity that we should be questioning across the board right now, from the idea of the anthrax manipulation, from the fact that Robert Cadleck and Alex Azar are the ones leading this charge. But it says, appears to maintain a close friendship with Bill Gates. The two men were interviewed about their participation in a panel at the World Economic Forum in Davos, right? The group behind pushing the Great Reset. Dr. Luciano Borio, has served in a senior leadership position at the FDA. I'm just showing you this, you know, I mean, of course, these things are meant to be, if you still believe in groups like the FDA and the CDC, well, I feel bad for you because of how obvious examples we have, which I'll show you one about the CDC in a moment, of the fact that these are politicized organizations that do not care about what's good, right for you. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't individuals within that that have the right intentions, but from a top-down approach, these groups do not care about your safety. The FDA has repeatedly lied about things like kratom, for instance, and claiming that people died from kratom when they actually had a gunshot wound to the chest. Ben Swan covered that. And just because they're fighting for the tobacco, or rather, in this case, the opioid industry, right? They're claiming that people were dying from kratom, which they really weren't. The same reason they used to claim that people died from cannabis, and they really weren't. Just because that they have intentions that have nothing to do with safety. Cannabis has been proven safe since traditional Chinese medicine, but they continue to pretend like there's not enough research. These are the kind of people we don't want in these positions. But it says, Borio is also the vice president of the technical staff at InQtel. See all these CIA tie-ins? InQtel is the CIA venture capital firm. Now, Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, you might remember his last name, brother of Rahm Emanuel, famous for saying, never let a good crisis go to waste. Or technically, I read this the other day and I was like, oh, I keep adding a certain word in there. I thought it was right there. Anyway, it doesn't matter. You remember the quote that, you know, the idea that, you know, take advantage of a crisis, which is what we're always pointing out, that that's what they're constantly doing, is they're using either creating or taking advantage of situations to drive in policy. So they're lying to you. But this guy wrote an essay called Why I Hope to Die When I'm 75. This guy is on the coronavirus task force. It's supposed to be protecting elderly people that are the primary issue of this supposed virus, right? In this essay, he argues that life after 75 is not worth living and that U.S. healthcare should not prioritize treatment for those over 75, right? So he didn't just say it was about him, which is what people are trying to say about this on the internet. No, he also made it clear that they should not prioritize treatment for those over 75, which, by the way, if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure Biden is over 75. So he's literally arguing that we should not prioritize the health of the president if he becomes president. Think about that. But he's arguing that these people that are at most risk, 80 and over, we shouldn't be focusing on? I think people would like to know that. And I probably would have liked to know that before they voted for this person. Now it says, once I have lived to 75, my approach to my health care will completely change. I won't actively end my life, but I won't try to prolong it. So you can see where his sentiment lies, where he doesn't believe these people should be focused on, and said that exactly. Dr. Zeke Emanuel is also on the healthcare advisory board of the Peterson Center alongside Bill Gates. Gates also called Emanuel the godfather of Obamacare and recommended his book as summer reading. The two men appear to have a working relationship that goes back at least a decade. Emanuel has also worked on the Gates Foundation and funded Gavi Global Vaccine Alliance. And of course, you can't forget Dr. Rick Bright with his The Darkest Winter and Coming. Like, this is just all of the same things. All of it. Out the new boss, meet the new, or out, what has the saying go? You know, bye, goodbye, old boss, say hello to the new boss, or whatever that. It's the same thing. It's the same thing with a different face. Right? This is the same old thing. Rockefeller, Council on Foreign Relations, all of this stuff is going in the same direction, guys. As I said before, you got Trump who is reluctantly letting it happen, and here's somebody who is just openly letting it happen. Doesn't change the fact that it's happening. It's all an illusion, as all of this is. And I wanted to point this out, by the way, as Lionel points out, you think this is a joke, don't you? Not only do you think it's a joke, but you can't believe that this is the guy Biden picked for his COVID team. And or whatever, and therefore, by implication, doesn't believe Joe Biden should be alive, which is not actually what he said. And that's why, so thank you for tagging me in this. Again, I get frustrated by stuff like this. I used to enjoy some of the stuff he would say, but I really am increasingly realizing that people like this are not doing what's in the best interest of people out there. One, because there's no link included. So what you want is people to share your tweet instead of reading the article and understanding it. All you want, that you're no better than anybody else by sharing a headline. If you want people to understand what you're talking about, share the link. Let them look at it for themselves. But it's also not necessarily what he's saying. So you're misrepresenting it. And I just don't like, I feel like we need to get away from this kind of you know, partisan media representation. And even in the independent media, it's rampant today. It's frustrating. But if you want to know the full story, read it here because there's links to all of it. And you can read the whole thing for yourself and understand that in his entire article, he doesn't say that that people over 75 shouldn't be alive, but he says very clearly that we should stop focusing on them and stop trying to keep them alive after 75. That's what he meant. Right? Things matter, guys. We have a responsibility to be accurate with this stuff. And yeah, we all make mistakes, but there's a difference between misrepresenting things and making mistakes. U.S. still facing dark winter with coronavirus, Biden warns again. U.S. prepares for worst 4 months of the pandemic as it stares down the darkest days yet. Gosh darn it. Regardless of the fact that the information continues to get less severe, they continue to scream at you that it's only going to get worse. The last thing that this is a desperate, dying machine that is desperately trying to get you to fearfully fall back into their control. That's what this feels like. We are on the cusp of changing something so huge, so monumental that that's what all of this is. People are flipping out right now. Even Biden supporters are recognizing the direction that this is going. And that's why they're continuing to keep you scared. Even about, it doesn't even matter what it's about. We're talking about the stock market. Oh no, is U.S. stocks mixed as dark winter saps vaccine rally? What? Yeah, it's a stock market dark winter. Don't worry. Just think, as long as you know that it's going to be bad and dangerous and you might die, that's all we want to get into your mind. As Kamala Harris said, as Joe Biden said yesterday, we're facing a dark winter if we don't get coronavirus under control. You mean the thing that's about the flu that's been under control for quite a long time, despite the fact that we're locking people down and making the death increase? Yeah, that's happened. Please wear a mask to reduce the spread and save lives. As of course I just put, I'll just leave this here with the dark winter documentary. But yeah, go wear a mask to reduce the spread, she says. Despite the fact that when she tweeted this, by the way, this hadn't come out yet. Ooh, the same day, it looks like. But the point being that they're stressing the idea that reduce the spread, which is clearly not how this works. And we're about to go through this because this is what the CDC is now saying. This is according to the New York Post. Masks protect wearers and others from COVID-19. So it went from the fact that masks do everything all the time, or, you know, being facetious, but that, you know, masks protect you and fight off viruses, to then suddenly, well, no, they only protect grandma, and it's about reducing the spread. And now they've come all the way back again and said, no, we were right the first time, and now it does help everybody. And realize the one thing that hasn't changed through all of this is the information, the research, because they continued to know this stuff and research this stuff all the way up until COVID-19. Numerous random controlled trials, numerous meta-analysis. In fact, meta-analysis right into it. Here's one from May 5th in the CDC that says the exact opposite, but we'll get to that in a minute, right? All of that. And yet now they're changing it again based on literally nothing but new conclusions based on the information that says exactly opposite of what they're claiming. I mean, and of course, right now what I'm going to show you is all the things they point to make their points are not random controlled trials, are observational or in-lab tests of mannequins and computer models. Do you realize how dumb that is that we're pointing to the random controlled trials, the gold standard, from them? And they come back with computer models and say, no, you're fake news. Here's the new thing we just did in a lab 20 minutes ago. And it turns your stomach how obviously corrupt these people are. Now, of course, it says the CDC's new guidance updated its previous assertion that the main benefit of wearing a mask was to prevent those infected from spreading the bug to others, which just, again, is illogical when you really break it down. But it says, especially if combined with other non-pharmaceutical interventions, such as social distancing, hand hygiene, and adequate ventilation. And as always, one of the main points, there's a lot of them here, is they make the case that, well, it works, but especially when you combine it with all these other things that have historically always shown an effect, right? If you are distanced away from somebody, if you're constantly washing your hands, these things have always shown to have an effect. So when you combine those with masks, well, you're going to suddenly see an effective mask, but it wasn't really the masks. It was the other things that have always shown an effect. And that's why they constantly combine all of them and pretend like the mask is what's making the difference. And it's really dishonest. And of course, all of that on top of this is just simply new observational information. It really is insulting to our intelligence. But of course, this is what they cite. So here's the New York Post. This is what they're citing. This is the new thing, November 10th, right here. Now it says cloth masks. Again, I mean, I couldn't believe it when I saw that they're still driving. And remember when I already showed you that the CDC actually altered its page, even though the page said cloth masks, then they changed it to make it not say cloth masks anymore because they were pushing cloth masks in every scenario, despite the fact that cloth masks increase your risk of infection, according to the NIH and the National Library of Medicine. So they just removed it. And that was very obvious, sort of how this is very obvious, that they just remove things because they don't want you to see it. And now they say it again, and they say they push cloth masks back in. Scientific Brief. So first of all, not a study. Scientific Brief, this is going over other studies they point to, but this is what's being pointed to instead of the studies, because the CDC says, understand, this is what people are taught, that you're not allowed to challenge them, or the World Health Organization, which makes no sense. That's not an intellectual, honest, intelligent discussion. That's control. I mean, I was going to end with this, but just perfect time to point it out. Right here, I would rather have questions that can't be answered than answers that can't be questioned. It's a fantastic quote. Rich, I'm not even familiar with the person, but this is an incredibly on-point thing to say right now. Because everybody wants all the answers, and we're never going to have all the answers. But what's happening is they're turning in to situations where there's answers that literally cannot be questioned as like an answer to that. Well, here it is. Here's the answer. And that's it. No more. No more discussion. But that's just not the case. Now, let's just start with this since I've shown it many times because we're already talking about cloth masks. And I want this to be in your head as we go through it. Right? This is from 2015. Okay? U.S. National Library of Medicine, National Institute of Health. Okay? A randomized trial of cloth masks compared with medical masks in healthcare workers. Okay? It says, the aim of the study was to compare the efficacy of cloth masks to the medical masks in hospital healthcare workers. A null hypothesis is that there is no difference between the two, meaning that there very clearly is and that they've shown that here. But this is exactly what you would want to find out. Random controlled trial, a huge study, done exactly on the contrast and whether or not they're effective versus the control arm. That's huge. That's literally the opposite of what they're pointing to here. Okay, and they come to the conclusion. The rates of all infection outcomes were highest in the cloth mask arm. The rate of influenza-like illness, which is similar to COVID, despite the fact that they're saying now they're using COVID-like illness and then blending that with the flu and pneumonia, which makes literally no sense because they just continued to claim that it was different. And that's influenza. That's not COVID. You're totally wrong. But now they're blending COVID on CDC, calling it CLI, COVID-like illness, and blending them. I mean, it's just, it's insulting to your intelligence that they continue to scream at you and let all the morons on Twitter freak out at you online about, you don't understand what you're talking about. And then they just go and change it. If they're now saying corona-like illness and blending pneumonia and flu with coronavirus, well, then you could easily consider the fact that these studies that were done in regard to the flu are going to be applicable, especially since they transmit in the same way. Now, it says the rate of influenza-like illness, which would include COVID, statistically significantly higher in the cloth mask arm. Even if you don't think that includes COVID, which is just dumb, but let's just say it doesn't, you're still having an increased risk of problems, of illness, of infection, of flu, which will then increase the problem. Cloth mask, it says, also had significantly higher rates of influenza-like illness. An analysis by mask showed influenza-like illness and laboratory-confirmed virus, which is important. This is like the gold star of a study right here, were significantly higher in the cloth mask group compared with the medical mask group. That's very clear. Now, this is what's most important, in my opinion, to this discussion today. Penetration of cloth masks by particles, droplets, were almost 97%. 97% it goes through the mask. Right? They don't address that in the study. I wonder why. And then, of course, even cloth, even medical masks, 44%. Okay, so if 97%, according to the NIH and the National Library of Medicine in 2015, in a random controlled trial that did everything they were supposed to, found that almost every single time the droplets went through your mask, and here's the CDC recommending cloth masks and saying that they protect you in the spread of COVID. Now, we're also going to get to the real point is that they switch over to saying that droplets are now the primary way they spread, despite the fact that every single time we've talked about this, they've said the opposite. But to finish this off, it says this study is the first random controlled trial of cloth masks, and the results caution against the use of cloth masks. Moisture retention, reuse of cloth masks, and poor filtration may result in a increased risk of infection. We're causing infectious bacterial pneumonia with these masks. It's already been shown numerous times. Doctors are beginning to speak out about it. And of course, those have the exact same symptoms of what we think we're dealing with. I wonder if that's what's happening. It says, as a precautionary measure, cloth masks should not be recommended. And they're saying for healthcare workers, but that's the most extensive. That's the, you know, if it's not for healthcare workers, then nobody should be using these. But here we are. Less than 5 years later, we're seeing this pushed. How do you explain that? Oh, well, they did something new. Well, no, they don't. They do not have another random controlled trial. So you don't get to say, well, here's an observational study. Here's a computer model. And say, well, now that's more important. Because it's the exact opposite of what they said when this first started. Oh, no, that's an observational study. That's not real. Here's a random controlled trial. They're hypocrites. It's politics and they're hypocrites. SARS-CoV-2 infection, it says, is transmitted predominantly by respiratory droplets. Please tell me that's, I mean, everybody out here should be like, what? How in the world can they just change the narrative? Because, I mean, this is common knowledge at this point. First of all, we just talked to a doctor who said that the droplets, by and large, end up with dead virus. The aerosolized particulates are how this spreads, the same way we're talking about most things. Right? And even the droplets are not what you might think. And then, of course, even though we're talking droplets, don't forget that we just showed you that 97% of the time, those droplets go through. Right? They're not countering any of this. But they're just simply stating it as fact now. Droplets generate when people cough, sneeze, or sing, or talk, or breathe, which apparently you can't do any now. CDC recommends community use of masks. This is where the play is, guys. Right? Because they're not saying necessarily that they're arguing that they work. That's kind of the argument, the claim. Also realize, first of all, that this is what the New York Post is claiming, that they're insinuating that they work in every possible way, which is ultimately what they're saying. But you can see that when they read into it, it's more saying that if we can get everybody to wear masks, the more we can do it, the more the community can use it, the more it'll end up having an effect. The same argument they use for vaccines. Who could have guessed? Right? So if just a couple of you wear masks, no, it has to be everybody all the time or it doesn't work. Which just doesn't make any sense. It says specifically non-valved multi-layer cloth masks. Now, I highlighted that because remember in the beginning when all they said was when N95s were the ones that you should be wearing? Right? Remember that? The valve ones, the fitted ones being the best? We all remember that. So what happened there? Because we all know now that those valves don't work two ways. That when you breathe out, it comes right out of the mask. It's only about breathing in. And even then, N95s are not big enough. The The filter is not small enough to stop 0.3 microns, which is what the COVID-19 is. So those don't work. By the way, neither do any of the other ones, because those are also too small or too big. Both medical masks and cloth masks are far too big. 0.3 microns is smaller than anything any one of these cloth masks can stop. That's why they're suddenly shifting to droplets again for the third redirection to just claim that, no, well, it's droplets, though. So now we can argue the masks work because it's no longer aerosolized particulates, which we've been saying the entire time. So they want you to wear cloth masks. Non-valved, multi-layer cloth masks that will trap your moisture in your breath and increase the risk of infection, as their own study has shown. Now it says masks are primarily intended to reduce the emission of virus-laden droplets. Now that is a straight-up false statement. Source control. Masks are designed to stop, in regard to most studies, that are most doctors that I've spoken to in general, before this COVID-19 discussion, there was never discussion about masks stopping the flow of virus, because that's just dumb. Like, when you really break it down on a scientific level, it is really stupid. It's not small enough to stop it. So when they're claiming that this primary intended to do that, that's just simply not the case. It's intended to stop large spittle and stuff from flying into an open wound while they're operating. And in other cases, designed to stop particulates in the air, dust and chemicals and whatever else. It is not designed to stop virus. And even in the case of particulates, it's only when they're large enough that they can be stopped. Over 0.5, I believe it was 0.3 microns. And that's why they're called N95s, because it stops only 95% of what's out there. Right? Anything under 0.3, it cannot stop, which is where this virus is. Or it might have been 0.5. In any case, it can't stop the virus, which is 0.3. And as they claim, primarily intended to reduce that thing, they're straight up lying to you, because that has only since COVID been the claim. And they also don't do that, as they'll all show you. Which, by the way, the image in this show also shows you on the side of the box, which we'll get to in a minute. But it says, masks. I want to make sure I'm not missing the little notations, because I want to show you these studies. Masks also help reduce inhalation of these droplets by the wearer. Filtration for personal protection. Now, the first thing we should be asking is, what about the aerosolized particulates? Even if they're now saying droplets are what's most important, and even if 97% of those droplets get through the mask, which already at this point, it doesn't make sense, but even if, what then about the aerosolized particulates? That before you were saying was the most primary mode of transportation or transmission. I guess we're just not caring about that anymore. But sure, this is going to protect you both ways. The community benefit, and here's the point, the community benefit of masking control is due to the combination of these effects. Individual prevention benefit increases with the increasing number of people using masks consistently and correctly. The combination is talking about washing your hands, social distancing, which I'll get to in a minute. It's right down in the study. And that's an illusion. That's a fallacy. Because if you only do a study about the masks, this is your outcome. That they don't have a statistically significant effect. Or the numerous other studies that I've shown you. Which, by the way, I should do this real quick. I don't want to lose that one either. Here, oh, good. It's right up here. Oh, here was the image I was talking about. I'll show that in a minute. But as always, guys, as every single time, no matter what, without fail, I don't have them there yet. I add them every time after the show. When I'm done, I add all the links, but I've been including all the mask studies for a long time now. These five studies from 2004 to 2020 all find verifiable health effects from wearing a mask, including statistically verified reduction in blood oxygen level, headaches, all kinds of stuff, hypoxemia, all in there. All five, NIH, National Library of Medicine, all of them find the same in different ways. But apparently that's fake news. Here's the cloth mask study I've already been showing you. Here's all the other studies. And each one in their own way show you exactly what I'm talking about, or that what they're saying isn't true. Right? So when they're pushing the idea of the combination of the effects, you'll find all of those studies out there that show you that when you just look at the mask and their effect on transmission, every single time, there's not a statistically significant effect on transmission. Every time, every random controlled trial. But suddenly, when they just do a meta-analysis, they somehow find a different conclusion. Explain that to me. Oh, I can. I can tell you why. Because they take it in a different direction, and they misrepresent what they're saying, and they lie to you. And of course, they say, and of course, using masks consistently and correctly, meaning that most people aren't. And that's another issue that we've already talked about. But no one's been taught how to do this. right? There's no regulation. There's no monitoring of this. There's no company that makes sure that the masks are built to a certain size or a certain thickness or a certain pore size. None of that. Anybody out there in the world, Joe Schmo can go and make a company and start patting together a bunch of plastic and call it masks, and that sells. There is no regulation. So how in the world can they come out and say that these things have the effect on this virus transmission when there's 1,000 different kinds of masks out there, none of which are regulated? See, there's so many points about this that are just flat out ridiculous. Source control to block exhaled virus. It says multi-layer cloth masks block release of exhaled respiratory particulates particles into the environment. Now, again, that's just a broad statement that could mean half of 1%, and that statement will be true. Multi-layer cloth masks block release of exhaled respiratory particles, right? So that could really be 1%, half a percent, one piece would still be a true statement that it blocks the release of particles. But to what degree? Does it help you? Does it change anything? And the point is that when you actually look at the studies they're referencing, you find out that, and here's the point, I'm only going to show you a few of them. But every single one of these studies you click on and go look at, it does not say what they're claiming that it says. Make sure I got the right one here. This one was, yeah, efficacy of masks right here. Now, okay, so this is one of the first ones they're pointing to. And they reference number 3 a lot. Here's all the references. They're all here for you to look at. They reference number 3 quite a bit in their only, what, 6 paragraph, completely changing their narrative post. But here's what it says. Efficacy of face masks, neck gaiters, and face shields for reducing the expulsion of simulated cough-generated aerosols. God, this is like the last thing that you should be using to make your statement. Not random controlled trial. It's a computer-generated manipulation or simulation. What's this? Freudian slip. But it says here, we used a cough aerosol simulator with a head form to propel small aerosol particles. Understand that it says 0 to 7. Okay, we're talking about 0.3, not 0, not 1, 2, 0.3. So when they say 0 to 7, I mean, arguably, I guess what they're saying there is that, that the point is that's just simply not true. And we've shown you this, that these when it gets down to 0.3 and below, these masks do not stop it. And the mask company itself will tell you that. Well, hear what they're saying, and they just use the general 0 to 7, and that's what the CDC is pointing to. But when you actually dig into it, you find out that there is a breakoff that does not work. As it says right here, 99% of cough aerosol, and that is if it's over 0.3. 59%, right? So how can you say that this is having, at the end of the day, this is what they're pointing to. And right off the bat, it says this research, first of all, is funded by the NIH, National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, U.S. Centers for Disease Control. So they funded this, you know, so that matters. But it's a computerized simulated model that was done on October 7th. So in the midst of this, while they're claiming things that are not backed up by studies, they pay somebody to do a computer simulated model, which right off the bat, you should be questioning whether there's political institutions here that do have an effect on what we're talking about, because yes, that is the case, that there are obvious examples of obvious political control over what the CDC is doing, which we'll get to in a minute. But that is not what they should be pointing to. But here they are pointing to it as the case, as it says that this blocks those particles, but it actually doesn't, not in the sense of fighting off what they're claiming it does in regard to COVID-19. Cloth masks not only effectively block most large droplets, 20 to 30 microns, we're talking 0.3 here. This is along with the, it says cloth masks not only, oh, here it is, and, but they can also block the exhalation of fine droplets and particles, also often referred to as aerosols, smaller than 10 microns. You see how they play with it right here. Smaller than 10 is not even close to what we're talking about. And again, they cite number 3, okay, which is simply talking about, they're talking about the wrong size here, guys. That's the point. And it's a computer model in the middle of a pandemic. It's the last thing you should be citing as anything legitimate. But then they also cite number 6 in this, right here, number 14. No, sorry. I'm sorry, guys. I'm trying to, number 5, right here. As you can see the numbers I'm looking for. They're citing the numbers at the bottom. So number 5 was this one. Visualizing the effectiveness of face masks in obstructing respiratory jets. So again, this is not a random controlled trial. This is not even a real world trial. It's not even an observational trial. This is a computer simulated effort in the middle of a pandemic. This was in June. Now remember, in June, in the same time frame was when the CDC is also claiming they don't work. And I'll show you that in a minute. But it says, the masks help mitigate the risk of cross-infection via respiratory droplets. However, there are no specific guidelines on mask materials and designs that are most effective in minimizing droplet dispersal. The masks help mitigate is what they're claiming. So if your mask stops one droplet, that is what they're claiming. And here's the CDC's going, look, there's a study that says they can block fine droplets and particles that are smaller than 10. They are straight up misrepresenting what this is telling you. It says there are insufficient data on cloth-based coverings, which are being used by a vast majority of general public. Well, sure, I guess they just forgot to include that in their gigantic push for specifically cloth masks. Oops. That's the one they're referencing in that statement that I just read you. Let's keep going. It says we use qualitative visualizations of emulated coughs. So they're simulating. And sneezes to examine how material and design choices impact the extent to which droplet-laden respiratory jets are blocked. See how that's just not even close to the same thing? Loosely folded the face mask and bandana-style coverings provide minimal stopping capability for the smallest aerosolized droplets. That, in fact, ladies and gentlemen, is the exact opposite of what they're saying. Well-fitted homemade masks with multiple layers of quilting fabric and off-the-shelf cone-style masks provide them proved to be the most effective in reducing droplet. We're not even talking aerosolized or small droplets. They're talking droplets as in big pieces of spit that come out of your mouth. These masks were able to curtail the speed and range of respiratory jets significantly, albeit with some leakage through the mask material and from small gaps along the edges. Cool. That sure sounds like it's keeping you safe, doesn't it? See, this group is not trying to prove the efficacy of anything. They're just simply trying to prove the effectiveness of face masks in obstructing respiratory jets. Just, you know, putting your hand in front of your mouth, right? So this is what the CDC is trying to misrepresent. Uncovered emulated coughs were able to travel notably further than the currently recommended 6 feet guidance, right? That's what they're finding. They're lying to you. Now it says multi-layer cloths can block up to 50 to 70% of fine droplets and particles. Again, they reference number three, which is not what this is saying. Well, first of all, they're talking about a simulation again, and they're talking about something that does not apply to the size of the virus that we're dealing with. And they say it again. And of course, they use 14, which I believe, I don't think I actually looked at. Let's take a look at that one. Effectiveness of face masks in preventing airborne transmission. Now, again, this was October, again. Now, I haven't even read this yet. Let's see what we see. Guidelines from the CDC and the World Health Organization recommend the wearing of face masks to prevent the spread, as they always start with, just they recommend. However, the protective efficacy of such masks against airborne transmission, effective, infectious, severe. Oh my God, that's incredible. I really haven't read this yet. Look at this, guys. I need to highlight this so you guys can see this. Make sure nobody misses this. This is what they're pointing to. This is number 14. Okay, number 14, which is right here. This is number 3 and 14 that they're referencing to say multi-layer cloth masks can, you see how they play this? Sure, it can. We didn't say it will, but it can both block up to 50 to 70% of the fine droplets. Fine droplets. Is that what that says? Where was it? Here. It says the protective efficacy of such masks against airborne transmission of infectious severe acute respiratory syndrome, droplets, and aerosols is unknown. Here, we developed an airborne transmission simulator, and you already see where we're going. Gosh darn it. Do you not feel sometimes like you're literally, like, how in the world are we not, how is this not the biggest thing in the world? We can all see what this is if you just open your eyes. That is not what they're claiming that it says. Let's continue. Upwards of 80% blockage has been achieved in human experiments that have measured blocking of all respiratory droplets. And again, they go to number 4. All right, we're showing you all of these. Oh, wait, actually, maybe I didn't show. I don't think I showed you 4 yet. Low-cost measurements. Let me see if I have that one open. Yeah, I did right here. So, low-cost measurements. So again, realize what they're actually claiming here. Again, I mean, it's really crazy what they're trying to say. Where was it? Upwards of 80% blockage has been achieved in human experiments that have measured all the blocking of respiratory droplets. It says, again, this was September, again, it says, led to widespread use of homemade masks and mask alternatives. It is assumed that wearing such masks reduces the likelihood for an infected person to spread the disease, but many of these mask designs have not been tested in practice. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. What are they saying here? That upwards of 80% blockage has been achieved by blocking all respiratory droplets? What are we missing? That these haven't been tested and we're not sure? Cool. We have demonstrated a simple optical measurement method, another simulation, to evaluate the efficacy of masks to reduce transmission of respiratory droplets. That's it. In proof of principle studies, we compared a variety of commonly available mask types and observed that some mask types approach the performance of standard surgical masks, while some alternatives, such as neck gaiters or bandanas, which is what they're pushing on you, offer very little protection. Is anybody are you guys seeing what I'm talking about here? Our measurement setup is inexpensive and can be built on, that's okay, they're just talking about the testing. This is a simulation that found that they don't even know, that we're not sure, right? This is incredible. But the CDC is only citing that one right there, number four, when they make that claim. Upwards of 80%. They are lying to you. With cloth masks and some studies performing on par with surgical masks, that you did see in there, but not the first claim. Filtration for personal protection. Studies demonstrate that cloth mask materials can also reduce wearers' exposure to infectious droplets through filtration, including filtration of the fine droplets and particles on less than 10 microns. They don't even cite anything in there, so that means it was things we already referenced. None of those things make that claim. And what they're doing there is saying less than 10. Less than 10 is gigantic in regard to a virus. 0.3 is what we're talking about. So when they just broadly make it 0.10 and they claim it can stop droplets, or they're just making a claim that's completely undefined. Are we worried about something that's 9 microns or 1 micron? No, we're worried about something that's 0.3 microns, which those masks cannot stop. And anybody can prove that to you. The mask companies themselves have made that clear. N95s can't even stop it because they're not small enough. The pores are not small enough to stop it. So when they start talking about droplets and using 10 microns or lower, they're tricking you. This is a play on people who don't understand what we're dealing with. The relative filtration effectiveness of various masks has varied widely across studies, right? So think about this. As they're claiming that masks work in a broad sense, they also just kind of say, well, they vary widely across all kinds of studies, but we're going to just assert what we want you to think anyway. In large part due to variation in experimental design and particle size analyzed. So random people making random things, random sizes, but yeah, trust us, they work. In some cases, filtering nearly 50% of fine particles in less than 1 micron, right? These things, guys, I'm talking about things that do not apply in this case. I mean, I don't want to take all the time in the world to go through every single one. I really hope you will, because you will see exactly the same thing that I'm talking about. That every time you read through the study, it is not what they're saying. And in every single case, we know as a matter of fact that these masks do not have the ability to stop 0.3 or lower. So what are they talking about? It says some materials, such as polypropylene, may enhance filtering effectiveness by generating triboelectric charge, a form of static electricity that enhances capture of the charged particles. You know, and it also has negative side effects of breathing it in, such as we've already talked about this. Regular masks, as well as the plastic ones, have negative side effects that you breathe in. Doctors have openly talked about this, but because they weren't used ubiquitously like they're pushing on us now, it was never really an issue. But now we're having all kinds of crazy side effects from these things. And they just don't want you to realize what's happening. It says, while others, like silk, may help repel moist droplets and reduced fabric wetting, thus maintaining breathability and comfort. Do you notice how they just kind of casually leave out that it's not just about breathability and comfort, but the fact that it could actually increase infection, moisture retention, reuse, poor filtration, increased risk of infection? Yeah, I guess they just don't care to keep you safe, which I thought was their job. Now it says, effectiveness of community masking are limited to observational and epidemical studies. Yeah, exactly. Like, don't you like how that's way at the bottom beneath the, they're telling you that this is not random controlled trials. These are limited observational epidemiological studies that you would have attacked us for saying were slam dunk in the reverse. It says each new analysis demonstrated that following directives from organizational and political leadership for universal masking, new infections fell significantly. Now, here is the deception. In every single one of the cases where they did this, guess what they were also doing? Social distancing, hand washing, lockdowns. So those things are what had an effect. Right. But understand, we also had an increase in deaths because of the lockdown. So it wasn't better for anybody. But the idea is that these things did minimize the effect, because we are talked about. If you're not near anybody, obviously that's going to stop anything from spreading. So the point is that when they claim this, even, by the way, who's to say whether their claims are even accurate for how much they've lied to us? But even in that claim, the idea is that they're claiming that this place used universal masks. And look, it all went down. But also, these things will eventually all go down anyway. And that's also one of the arguments they make about vaccines, which is polio in the past. That if you actually look at the research, you find that when they did the vaccines, when it first started, there was an increase. But then it was because it was already on its way to tapering off. They caused an increase with the vaccine, and then it tapered off continually after that. And they claimed that was a success. And even the creator of it said that himself. Now, here we are at a point where we're seeing the same thing. That they're saying that because of all of these things, that this is how it worked, but it was only masks. That's what this study or this article is making the claim of. But they know better than that, because they make the point in the conclusion. It says two of these studies and an additional analysis from data from 200 countries that include the U.S. also demonstrate reductions in mortality. And every single one of those studies, if you take the time to look, are talking about social distancing, hand washing, and masks. And then whatever other measures were taken by the people in these locations. And they say that that is because masks. Despite the fact that there are 1,000 other examples of places that have masks that aren't seeing that. But I guess they just don't want to include that. An economic analysis using U.S. data found that given these effects, increasing universal masking by 15% could prevent the need for lockdowns and reduce associated losses up to $1 trillion. So you realize how they're manipulating this, right? Because the point is that if they increase universal masking, well, then we'll just let you not have to lock down. And then we'll claim that when the lockdowns go away and that decreases the death, then we'll claim masks is what did that. Right? Because we're already showing you the correlation of lockdowns and the spike in deaths. So if they say the masks are working and they stop the lockdowns, they'll be able to gain the numbers and say, see, look, there was a drop in mortality. That's my perception of it, but it's clear based on the data. But they also say that it will also reduce the losses of money that are caused by COVID is how they're trying to frame that. No. That's your actions. The government are responsible for that loss of money. And whatever you do won't bring that back. That's a lie. Their conclusions, experimental and epidemiological data support community masking to reduce this. Right? That's their overall conclusion based on their misrepresentation of all of this stuff. The prevention benefit of masking is derived from the combination of source control and the personal protection for the mask wearer. That's what we're talking about. The relationship between source control and personal protection is likely complementary and possibly synergistic. You don't say. You don't say. Right? Again, with 14, we're talking about in regard, you know, again, I already went over all of these, but again, I really hope you'll go through each one and think for yourself and read these out. But again, what it's saying there is that it's working with everything else we're doing. So that individual benefit increases, well, what they're also saying here is that what we need is that everybody starts doing it, well, it'll have a compounding effect, which is not even verified and completely undefined. But of course, as long as they get everyone doing what they want, well, they can just argue that it's better. Same thing they do with the vaccines. Well, it's supposed to be, you know, the more we use it, the less we'll need it, that we'll get immunity, but every year we need more. Doesn't make sense, does it? Don't ask questions. Same thing here. As long as everyone does it, we'll pretend like it's okay. Further research is needed, they say, to expand the evidence base. Oh, good thing we're pushing it now, though, for the protective effect of cloth masks. Can you believe that they write that in the conclusion? Further research is needed to expand the evidence base. First of all, the evidence base is quite clear that they don't have a statistically significant effect. And in particular, it says to identify the combinations of materials that maximize both their blocking and the two things that we know they don't really do, as well as fit, comfort, durability, and consumer appeal, because, of course, we care about how you look. Adopting universal masking policies can help avert future lockdowns. You see how they're blaming this? That it's on, if you just wear a mask, we won't have to lock you down, especially if combined with other non-pharmaceutical interventions such as, and that's the main point. Regardless of anything you think I'm wrong about in this, guys, the point is that the studies do not come to the conclusions they say they do. And what they're arguing here is a complete reversal for the second time on what they said before this all started. I mean, it really is insulting to our intelligence, and we need to be able to see past this.
There's a lot of confusion among people and misinformation surrounding face masks. Can you discuss that?
The masks are important for someone who's infected to prevent them from infecting someone else. Now, when you see people and look at the films in China and South Korea, whatever, everybody's wearing a mask. Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
You're sure of it? Because people are listening really closely to this.
Right now, people should not be walking. There's no reason to be walking around with a mask. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better, and it might even block a droplet, but it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is. And often, there are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask, and they keep touching their face.
And can you get some schmutz sort of staying inside there?
Of course. But when you think masks, you should think of healthcare providers needing them and people who are ill. The people who, when you look at the films of foreign countries and you see 85% of the people wearing masks, that's fine. That's fine. I'm not against it. If you want to do it, that's fine.
But it can lead to a shortage of masks.
Exactly. That's the point. It could lead to a shortage of masks for the people who really need it.
Right. Now, again, the argument they're trying to make here, right, so we're clear, is they're continuing to try to make it seem as if he was lying to you there for a good reason. That's the argument today. Because I wanted to play the full clip so you see how it ends, where he's going, well, it's about the healthcare workers. But you hear what he says there. There's no reason that you should be walking around without a mask. It may make you feel better, right? This is all very clear. And it's not unique. We had the CDC, the World Health Organization. We had numerous governments say this. Of course, they were all lying to us for our safety. Sure. Anybody who think that, why would we be okay? Whoa, they lied then, but they're not lying now. The point is, guys, he was being honest with you. They do not have the effect that you think they do. But for whatever reason, they shifted the narrative, and it's clearly being driven in now. It's just incredible, incredible that we could be staring at that and hear them say it, and yet we continue to see the lies. Now, this is the one from May 5th, right? May 5th. This is something that happened. I mean, ask yourself how in the world we can have other ones they've done during this time frame, and they can come to the same conclusion, or that they can come to this conclusion, which I'll show you, and then come to a different conclusion a month later. So dramatically different with no new evidence. Please be intelligent enough to think about how that doesn't make sense. They don't just change everything. Look at what this says. Non-pharmaceutical measures for pandemic influenza. It says very clearly, we conducted systematic reviews to evaluate the effectiveness of PPE, personal protective equipment measures, on influenza virus transmission. Yes, about influenza. Now ask yourself why they did this about influenza in the middle of a COVID pandemic. Because it is how this is done, influenza-like. Right? You have to understand that they're trying to play games with you so you don't understand what they're dealing with. This is in regard to influenza-like illness. So they did this. And by the way, this is exactly what they're claiming in a better sense that they did here. This is a compilation of old studies that they evaluate and then say, oh, well, this is what we think. And including a few that are only models and observational, or not even, none of those were even observational. Those were all computer models that, by the way, are constantly being shown wrong in this COVID scenario. Every computer model we've had has turned out to be wrong. Why would we trust this one? But so the point is that they did this during this and actually did random controlled trials, or they found them. Unlike this one, ask yourself why that makes sense. Here's what they did. It says, we searched four databases, Medline, PubMed, Embase, and Central, for literature in all languages. We aim to identify random controlled trials of each measure for laboratory-confirmed influenza outcomes for each of the measures because, as we know, random controlled trials provide the highest quality of evidence. Let that sink in. Okay, so they go over hand hygiene, they go over a lot of stuff, but here it is on face masks. This is the first one I showed everybody, and I believe I showed this before pretty much anybody. It says, in pooled analysis, we found no significant reduction in influenza transmission with the use of face masks. First part. In pooled analysis of all the random controlled trials, Of all the different things they looked at from different languages, they found no significant reduction in transmission. That means both. Okay. One study evaluated the use of masks among pilgrims from Australia during the Hajj pilgrimage and reported no difference in the risk for laboratory-confirmed influenza virus infection in the control mask group. They go over a bunch. I'm only going to show you a couple of them, but they go one after the other and list off these studies. The overall reduction in influenza-like illness or laboratory-confirmed influenza cases in the face mask group was not significant in either studies. This is the important one, or both these last two are. Another study evaluated face mask use as a source control for infected persons only. What do you know? Exactly what they're talking about here. Source control, source control, source control. It's all through this thing. Source control. Right? I mean, that's one of the big talking points in there. Like, oh, it's all right here. Source control, source control. That's all they're talking about here. They're talking about both ways, understand? But that's clearly saying, this evaluated face masks in source control for infected persons only. Random control trials, the opposite of what the other one is. And the remaining studies provided masks for the infected persons as well as their close contacts. Make sure you hear this. None of the household studies reported a significant reduction in secondary laboratory confirmed influenza virus infections in the face mask group. Here's the important part. There is limited evidence for the effectiveness in preventing influenza transmission, either when worn by infected person for source control or when worn by uninfected persons to reduce exposure. That is a double whammy. That is both the things they're trying to claim. The CDC itself in May, doing a massive reevaluation of all the controlled trials, found exactly the opposite of what they found a month later with no new information. And here they are combining even more information from before and new models they did when they paid for them, and then claiming that changes it completely to a whole nother standing. A child could see how ridiculous this is. It says, our systematic review found no significant effect on face masks on transmission of laboratory-confirmed influenza. But here we are. Understand that even the CDC even reached out to do a massive meta-analysis, as we showed you, and one of the main ones that did found that there was no effect. And guess what? They left that one out. I already showed that in a past show. You don't do that unless you're trying to hide things. They're lying to you, guys. It's everywhere. They're constantly lying to you. They're constantly keeping the information from you that these things don't work, that they increase the risk. And all of their studies from the NIH and the National Library of Medicine are showing you exactly that. Let alone the reality that the box themselves has always said this from the beginning. And I told you, you have to realize how crazy this is. Just so you can't, in case you can't see it. And this is such a contentious point. Oh, it's fake news. How in the world is it fake news to show the side of a box? This product is an ear loop mask. This product is not a respirator, it says, and quote, will not provide any protection against COVID-19 or other viruses or contaminants. Now, this is just one kind of mask, right? It's not an N95, but this is, if not, cloth masks are the most prominent, which cloth masks are way worse than these. This is the one you buy at Walgreens, okay? This is the one that you would argue, this and cloth are the vast majority of what people are wearing. The reason it says that, and first of all, you have to realize that it says COVID-19, meaning that the person who, the owners of this company put this on after COVID-19 started. So the point being, that they knew that they didn't have an effect, and this is their liability. This is their ability. They're trying to get out ahead of this, so there's no liability here. So you can't have a waterfall of lawsuits to come after everybody gets issues and sick, and all these problems start happening, and they come and sue the box company or the mask company because they didn't say they didn't work. This is them knowing that they don't work the way they're claiming and getting ahead of it. That's what this is. And of course, all they claim is that you're somehow misrepresenting truth by showing exactly what the box company itself stated. I'm not misrepresenting what it says. I'm reading exactly what it says. Will not provide any protection against COVID-19 or other viruses or contaminants. Now, the reason they tried to claim this was fake news is because they're saying, well, it doesn't protect you, but it protects your grandma. Except that that's not true. And we just showed you that, and I've continued to show you that they don't. 97% of the time goes through. Or the fact that they showed you here that they have no effect one way or the other. And this is also the CDC. What? Right? I mean, what are we talking about? So the point is that the information has come out enough for you to understand why they did this. And yet they're still trying to lie to you. They're still trying to force it down your throat for, I think, very nefarious reasons. But really, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what I think because we don't know for sure. The intentions we could think about forever, but we need to know and we need to understand and we really need to come to peace with is that they are lying to you. It just couldn't be more clear. Now, I have these in here as well. I think I had a couple more I was going to show you. I think we talked about that one. Oh, here is the bigger one just so you can see the full study, right? Because I just want to show you that these are all just simulations. These are all computer simulations, that none of this 3D modeled graphics and stuff, and none of this has to do with what they're telling you it does. I think we read that one too. Here's another one. There's another one they reference. Face coverings and respiratory tract droplets dispersion. We investigate the effectiveness of surgical masks and single layer cotton masks on mitigating dispersion of large respiratory droplets. And then it says non-aerosol, right? So the opposite of what they're making the claims of in there, despite the fact they start the whole thing, as like we kind of reiterated, as claiming that droplets are how this spreads, but then go on to assert throughout the whole thing that it's about the smaller ones. That doesn't even make sense. I even just thought of that. It just doesn't make sense at all. But it says, we tested a mannequin ejecting fluorescent droplets and human volunteers in speaking coughing conditions. Not in a controlled trial, a model. Guys, this is a joke. This is a flaming joke. They want you to be tricked by all of this. Now, again, more, I could go off on this for so long. I mean, even that I feel was way longer than I intended. There's so many that I could talk about. I mean, again, there's so many of these down here that are relevant to what we're getting into. Take the time to read them. There's so much there. What about add on to this whole discussion, the idea of negative health effects, right? Yeah, they protect you, but we're pretending that it's fake news that they have any kind of health effects, despite the fact that these things are all very clear, that they tell you that they very clearly have examples of hypercapnic hypoxia with potential increase of acidic environment. These are also from the NIH and the National Library of Medicine. It's very clear, guys. They found that there's health effects, there's negative health side effects, and yet they act like it's fake news. How do you explain that? That's the one I just showed you. I just want to show you one more since I brought it up. I always forget which one. This one's the best, the worst, as it were. The physiological impact of N95s, which again were the ones that in the beginning were saying were the best. We're just simply talking about masks in general. Something, and understand that the N95s only, or the vent allows you to breathe out freely, but breathing in is the problem. So this is half as bad in this regard, right? Because the other masks block it both ways or have an effect on your breathing both ways. But this says, they were recruited for, it says 70% of the patients showed a reduction in partial pressure of oxygen, PaO2, and 19% developed various degrees of hypoxemia. This is, guys, it's just, it's right here in black and white. Hypoxemia, meaning an abnormally low concentration of oxygen in the blood. What else do you need to see? This is the National Library of Medicine and the NIH. But it's fake news though, right? They're not even arguing this is, they're just saying this is not true. No one's coming out with other studies. The point is, because it's corrupt, guys. This is an old article. And as I pointed out a minute ago, we've covered this as well. This is from Children's Health Defense. CDC scientists expose agency corruption. It says, last month, The Hill published a letter sent by more than a dozen senior Center for Disease Control scientists charging the agency with nursing an atmosphere of pervasive research fraud. Everyone's going, oh, Children's Health Defense, they're anti-vax. That's fake news. Okay, well, here's The Hill. Are you okay now? Can we continue? The CDC is being influenced by corporate and political interests. Oh, now it's okay. Now we can believe it because it's on The Hill. Concerns about the inner workings of the CDC have mounted in recent months amid disclosures of cozy corporate alliances. Now a group of more than a dozen senior scientists have reportedly lodged an ethics complaint alleging the federal agency, the CDC, is being influenced by corporate and political interests in ways that shortchange the taxpayers. This was 2016. Guess what happened? Nothing. A group calling itself the CDC Scientists Preserving Integrity, Diligence, and Ethics in Research, or CDC SPIDER, put a list of complaints in writing in a letter to the CDC Chief of Staff and provided a copy of the letter to the public watchdog organization, U.S. Right to Know. The members of the group have elected to file the complaint anonymously for fear of retribution. I bet you, I can almost promise you that they got sniffed out, and that's why we're not hearing anything about it. It says, it appears that our mission is being influenced, they say, and shaped by outside parties and rogue interests. How relevant is that to right now? They tried to tell you in 2016. They are being influenced by rogue interests and outside parties. What does that mean? I don't know. Let your imagination run wild. That's pretty scary. The group right now that's influencing this direction and lying about what they're telling you, it should be scary. And congressional intent for our agency, they say, is being circumvented by some of our leaders. Interesting. 2016, think about it. What concerns us most is that it is becoming the norm and not the rare exception. These are people inside the CDC telling you that they are allowing politics to influence what they think and what they say and what they announce. These questionable and unethical practices threaten to undermine our credibility and reputation as a trusted leader in public health. What's long gone? Check this out. Definitions. So again, think masks, right? Think about how masks work and how they affect us, or the definition of the terms they use. Well, definitions were changed. The data was cooked to make the results look better than they were. Please think about where we are right now. An internal review that involved staff across CDC, so across multiple locations, occurred, and its findings were essentially suppressed, so media and or congressional staff would not be aware of the problems. And guess what? Nothing happened. 4 years later, here we are. And surprise, surprise, they're lying, cheating, and stealing like they always were, like these scientists tried to tell us. It's incredible. It's really incredible that we have all the tools in front of us, which is what I'm always trying to do, which is why they delete us from places like YouTube, because they're scared of this. They are desperately scared of the truth and your ability to be smart enough to think through it for yourself. They are terrified. And that's why they censor people like me. Because I'm not telling you what to think. I'm giving you tools by which to think, with which to think. You know, use these, think about it, research, ask questions, come to your own conclusions. That scares them. I covered this. This is actually John Rappaport's article from back in 2017. But it's not news. This has been around. It's news that it was suppressed and that the media, the mainstream journalists, completely hid it from your view. Because they're not journalists, they're propagandists. And of course, to finish this off, why don't we switch it up for a second so you can see me, since I haven't done that the whole time. But let's finish this off with the last couple of discussions here. Let's see, how long have we been going? About two. It's a short one, huh? But let's see. This is about the vaccine here, and this is an important discussion. Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla sold millions in stock on the same day of the vaccine reveal. So this is the time that he said, oh, well, 90% effective, which, of course, you know I'm going to have to talk on again. I just can't let that go. But they sold the stock. Do you remember when Moncef Salawi? I should have looked this up before. Sold all of his stock for Moderna. Where was it? Or was it GlaxoSmithKline? I forget which one. It was Moderna, I'm pretty sure. Oh, that's even right, though. But I remember he sold a bunch of it. Let's say to sell. It says that they were worth $10 million, but after stock went up, they're now valued at 12.4. So he sold a bunch of stock, made a bunch of money, but he kept some of it. Derek's article talked about this, which is corrupt. It's his retirement fund. Like he's some old, cheeky little, you know, just a little happy guy. You know, this is a guy involved with some really horrifying stuff. And a guy who was flagrantly violating conflicts of interest involved with something that's very serious. But then they kind of just be quirky about it. Be like, oh, it's my retirement fund. Don't take an old man's retirement fund. That's ridiculous. So he's kept some stock in regard to a company in which he is making choices about whether or not they succeed. Good times. Now, of course, that may change if Biden gets elected because of his task force and so on. But we just showed you that their task force is not much better. And in fact, it could be much, much worse. But at the end of the day, the same agenda will be pushed forward. But the point is, we saw Moncef Salawi do the same kind of thing. Now here's Pfizer screaming that, oh my gosh, it's 90%. And then he jumps in and sells 62% of his stock. That screams manipulation. You know, the same way that Moderna did that, and then it tanked because it was kind of a misrepresentation of how it was working. We have antibodies. And then it's like, no, you don't really. This was a lie. They kind of misrepresented how it worked. Same thing here. Pfizer says 90% effective, but what they really are talking about is trials that were designed to succeed. And I'll show you again. But if he's selling 62% of his stock, I think that's because Pfizer knows that they're misrepresenting the truth. And they know that this is probably one of the last opportunities they're going to have to cash out before the illusion is either exposed or potentially they get caught. Sure, that's my take on it. But regardless, when a CEO sells 62% of a stock involved with what's considered to be one of the most valuable things happening in the world right now, yeah, it's a little bit suspicious, don't you think? Pretty ridiculous. But the point is, guys, that I keep trying to show you, and I know I've read this many times, but this is every time I'm hoping to catch like one more person out there. Do you need to realize what this is? Forbes is the one that put this out. COVID-19 vaccine protocols reveal that the trials, the safety trials, are designed to succeed. Now realize we're talking about Pfizer, who just said 90% effective and the CEO sells more than half of his stock. Understand, this is why. Interim analysis success requires a 70% efficacy. So the point is that in the interim analysis of these vaccines, they need 70% efficacy for them to be able to deem it a success. It says the vaccine or placebo will be given, or normally is, did I miss that part? That's weird. Oh, it's right there. I did miss it. So here's right above it. So the vaccine efficacy is typically proved by large clinical trials over several years, which is obviously not what's happening now. Rushing this out as fast as possible and then monitoring your body for 2 years. That's how they're doing this. It says the pharmaceutical companies intend to do this or usually do with 30 to 60,000 people. That's how these trials work. But it says the first surprise was found upon closer reading when you found out that, guess what? It at most includes 64 people, 164. So it went from 30 to 60,000 to at most 164 people. So you realize how dramatically that changes what 90% efficacy actually translates to. But it says the interim analysis success, 70%. It says for Moderna, the initial interim analysis was based on the results of only 53 people. That's it. Moderna's success was 13 people out of those 53. Right? So as long as 13 people or less get sick, they're good. Now, just to jump through this quick, Johnson & Johnson, only 77 people, 18 or less. Same analogy, same narrative. And AstraZeneca, it's only 50 people for 12 or less, right? So this is supposed to be 60,000 people, and each one of these companies is using 100 or more and saying, as long as 12 or so people get sick or less, then we're good. And then translating that into percentages, which is ridiculous. But here's the worst part. Pfizer, their success requirements, 32 people. With a success margin of 7 or less. Okay, so if 7 or less people get sick, that's considered a success. Now ask yourself this, if 90% efficacy is about 7 or less, that means that if one person gets sick, you can claim you've got 90% efficacy. But 1 in 7 is not really 90% in regard to how the world perceives it. 1 in 7 is a hell of a lot of people. But you see, it doesn't really matter because it's about gaming numbers to make you be okay and not have vaccine hesitancy that they're all so afraid of, despite every reason in the world to be hesitant about the vaccine they're producing. But sure, 90%, and then he sells 62% of his stock. Anybody else getting the picture? The primary analyses are a bit more expanded. So that's interim. Primary, which you think might be more? Nah, it's not really. 164 people for Pfizer. That's it. 100 for AstraZeneca, 151 for Moderna, 154 for Johnson & Johnson. That is it. They're testing, Pfizer tests 164 people in its primary analysis. And if they get 60%, not even 70, but 60 in the secondary, primary, of 164, that's considered success. And you realize that 90% efficacy in that small amount does not translate to the same thing that you think it does. The second surprise, it says, of these protocols is how mild requirements for contracted COVID-19 symptoms are. A careful reading reveals the minimum qualifications for the case is a PCR test. So based off the right off the bat, you're using a test that could be wrong. And then just mild symptoms. These include headache, fever, cough, or nausea. These vaccine trials are testing to prevent common cold symptoms. Is that what we think we're doing? These trials certainly do not give assurance that the vaccine will protect from the serious consequences, if there are any. Johnson & Johnson, and that's kind of the point, right? So if we're not really in much danger and they pump this thing out and claim, well, look, no one's dying now, even though arguably maybe not before, well, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Look, it worked. Maybe it wasn't happening at all. Johnson & Johnson is the only trial that requires the inclusion of severe COVID cases. That's it. But yay, Pfizer, they're working. And then he quietly sells all his stock, 62%. Incredible. Well, China's vaccine trial was halted in Brazil as well after serious adverse events. But don't worry, guys, it's all for your safety, despite this being about the flu and nobody wants to talk about it anymore. Well, as Bird on a Mission pointed out, exactly, Ian Brown says, it's incredible that fully grown adults would consider taking a rushed vaccine made by a firm with a track record of killing kids and paying billions in fines worldwide. That is the most true statement I think I've ever seen in this whole process. I can't believe I'm right there with you, Ian. How in the world are grown people not thinking past what the CDC has to tell them, despite things like this? Or the fact that they've got caught lying before? Or the fact that exactly what he said, that the companies working with them, like Johnson & Johnson or Pfizer, have obvious track records of lying to you about safety. But here we are trusting their word on safety. Sort of the way that we're trusting the companies that run voting machines on how well they work, even though the voting machines are tied to people with interest over whoever is running. This is crazy. We are in a position in the world right now where it's never been more clear that we are being gamed and the whole thing is rigged and the whole thing is a scam. And I think we need to see that more than ever. It just really cannot be more clear. Now, the last part I wanted to share is the idea of the digital passports, the immunity passports more specifically. Ticketmaster reportedly planning mandatory COVID-19 vaccine testing policy for concert attendance. Pretty crazy. Now, of course, it's not, this is what all of the naysayers, well, it's not yet, they didn't do it yet. Cool, I guess that means everything, right? Because it's not like they're telling you they're gonna do it. That doesn't mean they're gonna do it though. Sure, it doesn't guarantee they'll do it, but just like before, Trump will never do that. Oh, they're not gonna make you wear masks. Oh, they're never gonna make you lock in your house. Every time they say that, they'll never do this, and they do it. They go, well, it's for your safety. You know, it's like just there's never an answer with these people. This is happening. We all see it happening. Don't listen to people that are too afraid to allow their logic to rule. Right? This is clearly happening. And they're telling you right now, Ticketmaster, which is in control of like every ticket and venue and concert and I mean, everything. They're saying that you're going to have a test or a vaccine to be able to buy a ticket. It says the leading concert promoters in live events industry are preparing realistic policies for how they can responsibly begin to welcome fans back inside venues without fear of viral spread or legal consequences. A report shared by Billboard on Wednesday details that Ticketmaster is working to develop multi-step guidelines for how fans can purchase tickets when concerts and festivals return, possibly as soon as the summer and fall of 2001. Think about how far away that is. Here's where we are. Right. And they're already pretending we won't even be able to access these things until the fall of 21. Gee, 15 days to flatten the curve. Right. And then 9 months, a year later. Do you realize how long this has been going on? Isn't this supposed to be curved by different timings or different weather? No, it's just ridiculous. This is continued based on the illusion of the media and the illusion of your government. That's how this is continued. It says it's working to develop multi-step guidelines for how they can. Of course, the point in that is that we're talking about tests that will then transition into vaccines. And that's what they're telling you here. And what all these other companies like WiseKey, I just talked about, is already stating that they're going to use the tests and then will transition to vaccines once that's available. That's the stated purpose. Remember when that was fake news by the blue checks? They'll still tell you it's fake news if you post on Twitter because they're doing what they're told to do, apparently, or they're too afraid or too dumb to know what they're looking at. It says the current plan, which the result report details is still in a development phase and not yet an official company policy, would be comprised of three stages. First, any fan who purchases a ticket to any event would have to prove they have received the COVID-19 vaccine or show a negative test. Now realize we're using tests that have a high false positive, and I can almost guarantee the moment the vaccine comes out, suddenly we'll be able to address how there's false positives and the test won't be able to be used and it will only be vaccines. But we won't address how that very comment undermines the need for the vaccine, but it's too late. It's already out. We need it all. I know that sounds crazy, but watch that come true exactly as I said it. The point being that the test has a high false positive and it will probably segue into only needing the vaccine before you can get in. But even then, how is it that you need to be forced to have a test? where, by the way, they have access to your DNA, which some people pretend like that doesn't mean anything, but it very much does. There's a reason 23andMe and all these different companies were harvesting your DNA and genome and the whole genome project. There's a reason that was happening. But of course, we're conspiracy theorists because you're, you know, too high-minded and stuffy to be, I'm not a child. I can't think about things like that. You can't be logical about things. Nobody conspires to steal from us. Oh, you're so smart. You know, it's just they have such a high perception of themselves. And realistically, are some of the most unintelligent people out there when it comes to what's sitting right in front of them. Depending on the COVID-19 health regulations and testing capabilities in their specific region or state, fans would likely be able to get tested on the day prior or even the day of the event at sanctioned lab or out there. That's just a hypothetical. The point is that what if you can't get a test? What if they're too busy? What if you can't schedule it in time? Well, then you don't get a ticket. Period. So now you have a whole nother process you have to go through before you can even go buy a ticket for the concert you want to go to. That's your new normal, guys, and it's not going away. After undergoing a test, the ticket holder would have to permit the lab health clinic to send the results to a third-party health pass company, like the ones we talked about, like Common Pass, like Wise Pass or Wise Key, forget which one it was, or all the other ones, the immunity passport companies that have been trying to push this in for a decade. And now they have COVID-19 justified. They were using it for other things before. Now it's being pushed in here. It's all about surveillance and control of you. That's what it's always been about. The contact tracing, all these programs were all applied to prisoners, to terrorists, to all kinds of things, mass shooters, and now they're being used to track you for your safety. Does that make sense? Or tracking cattle, for instance? All these things have been used for those purposes. None of those things are for their safety, but now it's for your safety, though. Just don't think too hard into it. The third-party health company would have to verify that the subject is tested negative or can prove they've been vaccinated to Ticketmaster. So now Ticketmaster is now a privy to your medical information so you can go to, you know, go see, I can't even think of a band right now, go see whatever bands are playing these days, which would then issue the ticket holder with the proper credentials needed to access the event, likely via the Ticketmaster app. Ticketmaster is also reportedly planning its new Smart Event Solution program, which would help both promoters and fans manage the post-COVID-19 era. Right, which is going back to normal when the vaccine comes? Doesn't sound like it. That sounds like a whole new time after that's done, right? All the lies they keep feeding you about going back to normal when the vaccine, that's never been the truth, and everyone is telling you that. The point is the social distancing policies, they're creating, what they're talking about, smart events are like the bubbles you've seen, right? Or the little mini stages where you can stand around other people. They're forcing you not to be close to anybody. In a really, really ridiculous way when it seems to be wildly unnecessary, I think entirely, but at the very least for anybody under 80, if you're listening to what they're saying. In addition to new guidelines, it says on delayed entry and contact tracing opportunities should a breakout occur, right? So they have this whole thing set up. The safety parameters for concert venues will be mutually agreed upon by state, regional health officials, and promoters like Live Nation. Your whole world is going to be different. It already is, guys. They pulled the trigger without your consent. Oh, you thought you were going to get to vote on changes like this? Nah, you're not really in a democracy. You guys should see that by now. Of course, globalist Klaus Schwab says we'll never return to normal after COVID. Right, you know, the guy leading the Great Reset. I wonder what he knows. It's just incredible. All we need to do is listen, pay attention, because they're telling you right now. As Ivor Cummings points out, and I've actually covered this already. I covered this back when I first saw this, but it's important to reiterate again. Here's the World Health Organization in 2019 saying the opposite of what we're doing. As Ivor points out, the World Health Organization as recently as November 2019, right when this was starting, I argue, recommended against track and trace, against contact tracing. They recommended against quarantine. No consideration was even given to general lockdowns of healthy citizens as it was simply too ridiculous to contemplate. But I guess now with new information, they changed to sort of a now masks work because we say they do. Same thing. They said these don't work. We shouldn't do lockdowns. We shouldn't be doing track and trace. We shouldn't be doing quarantine because they don't work. You can see that I covered all of this. It says it's not recommended to reduce transmission. Active contact tracing is not recommended because it says there's no obvious rationale for it in most member states. But then they do it. And well, rather the whatever entity is leading everybody makes that the case, and then they just go along with it. I mean, think about how stupid it is to argue that in a matter of months, they literally changed their entire policy they've had for years because of what? Because of some study they really quickly did right in the middle of COVID-19? Or because there was a political move that happened? Let the record state. It's all there for you, guys. To end on a slightly positive note, Solidarity, Italy, day 18 of anti-lockdown protests. As the person says here, Geneva, day 18 of lockdown protests in the big lockdown house. Protesters lay siege to local administration building. But get this, police remove helmets in solidarity. As they point out, when the police and army take protesters' side, well, I argue that's when change starts to begin. Right? Historically speaking, when the enforcement arm begins to change sides, well, that's when change starts. Take a look.
Allora, sì. Si stanno togliendo il casco, immagine. Un gesto di distensione dai poliziotti che un grande applauso sta. È partito e sta abbracciando la piazza. Un momento di distensione. Vediamo tutti gli agenti. Hanno tolto il casco.
Now, I know it's in another language and everything, but you can clearly see what's going on here, right? I mean, you can clearly see these people are clapping because these police are taking their helmets off in solidarity with what they're protesting, which means that these people, these police who are supposed to be enforcing for the state, are realizing that they're in the wrong position. That's a really big deal. Now, that does not mean that that one move, this one act, is going to change everything. But what it means is it might start the turn the tide, right? We might begin to see a waterfall of people changing sides because they realize that they are not enforcing the Constitution in the case of the United States, or that in fact they're violating their oaths by doing things that are inherently unconstitutional. We need to see, guys, that all we need is enough people acting. People need to start speaking, chanting, protesting, writing, everything they can think about to continue to show the world that we are not being swayed by this, that we are being lied to. And only the most fearful and most uneducated and most uninformed people in the world are the ones screaming that we're in a bad way and that we're all going to die, because the evidence is simply not there. Going from 3.6 to 0.02 coming from the CDC. And I don't even believe 0.02 is correct. I believe that everything is being manipulated at this point, because we have evidence of all of that. That's not hypothetical. So as we're staring at this change and we can see people turning, it's time to stand up. It is time to do something. It's time to make every action count, because I swear every day that goes by that we are not stopping these things in its tracks, we are losing something every single day. So take the time to be strong in a moment when most people are being weak, or when too many people are being weak. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for thinking for yourselves and continuing to spread the information. By the way, just on a shout out on the way out, I just got a message from Tony Heller on YouTube. He has Real Climate Science, the channel. He was just taken down by YouTube. So another person gets taken down. Regardless of what you think about his work or the content of it, he is an individual, in my opinion, that's very smart, very educated, very objective, who was just removed because they don't agree with what he's saying, because he's talking about COVID-19, because he's talking about things like climate change in ways that you're not allowed to say on YouTube. That's why new platforms that will be coming in the near future will allow people like that to speak and have an intellectual, intelligent discussion, which is the real way we actually learn things. Thank you for being here. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
There's a lot of confusion among people and misinformation surrounding face masks. Can you discuss that?
The masks are important for someone who's infected to prevent them from infecting someone else. Now, when you see people and look at the films in China and South Korea, whatever, everybody's wearing a mask. Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
You're sure of it? Because people are listening really closely to this.
Right now, people should not be walking. There's no reason to be walking around with a mask. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better, and it might even block a droplet. But it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is.